This is going to be another episode of Snake and Banter. Our guest for this one is Armchair IGL, who is someone people might have seen the tweets from. He has a YouTube channel. He's done a couple of videos. He did one about that Boros situation within Falcons, for example. And he will soon be writing for Rush B Media. So there you go. There's the intro. Basically, it's one of those people where I've just found them. And like Bruce Springsteen in that video, I've picked them from the crowd and invited them up on stage to dance with us. And we'll actually see if this turns out to be Courtney Cox, or maybe it's just some weirdo in the crowd and they have to go back into the crowd. Security goes, you know, removes them from the building. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. And you can never know. It's the crucible. It might break someone. We never know. So as usual, I'm charging. We always have the guests start though. And we always start on a good note. So what is your good point for the show?
Right. Well, first and foremost, I just want to say thank you for having me. Always been a big fan of both of you, and honored to be here. So my good point is, and I know we're not really a big fan of hedging some opinions or anything, and I just want to say that I'm stating this as a fan with rose-tinted glasses, but I think it's great that Starladder and PGL/Perfect World are re-entering the CS scene. I think that with the new Valve system, or with partnered leagues ending in 2025, Valve recalculating how teams will be invited to the major via prize money, I think that it's going to shake up the scene in a good way. I think it's kind of restarting. I think that we're entering the final form of what the CS2 circuit is going to look like. And I think that it's good for all parties, and although there are certain caveats, of course, but I think that tier two teams are going to get a bigger chance, or more of a chance. I think Maui kind of stated in a previous episode that the scene is kind of getting flatter in a way, which I agree, but I do think that it'll be a good thing. I think that TOs are going to benefit from more competition. There is some concern about possibly tournament quality dilution, but overall, I think that having more tournaments is going to give opportunities for teams. And I think that in the end, the majors will be a better product overall. And I'm happy to poke holes in my own argument, but I'd love to hear what you guys think about it.
Well, the first thing is that I am a fan of competition. I'm pretty against monopolies in any form in this space, especially given that I work so closely with it, because and with Starladder coming in, with PGL coming back in, I feel like this is a case where I just feel like when we just see the same two TOs repeatedly, namely Blast and ESL, despite the fact that they have a very high quality and standard for the work that they do, it's nice to just get different voices. For example, if I think like one big thing is that if it weren't for PGL, I don't think Richard would be back in the space as a talent, for example. And it's really cool to see different people on broadcast. And I actually, now that I haven't really worked an event for a couple months and I've just been watching from the sidelines, I will say that viewer fatigue is real. And what I, before, where I used to kind of look at comments and be like, you know, I'd read like a forum post or something like that. It's like, oh, why are we seeing the same talents over and over again? Before, I was a little bit more like, well, I think those are some of the best talent out there, but really, there's so many ways that you could arrange, so many constellations you can make for talent arrangements that lead to unique, fresh broadcasts that you're sorely reminded of when you tune into something like EPL, where it's the same people for all every week, basically. Like, it's the same core people. And it's like, even though I think that a lot of these people are incredibly high-quality talent, I like seeing the constant shift. I like that usually one TO is going to take a chance on another talent, another broadcast talent, beyond the fact that they sometimes have some cool additions in terms of broadcast, in terms of the way they run a desk, in terms of the way that they decide to present information. Even an overlay sometimes can make it feel a little fresh, just the visual fatigue of seeing the same overlay for 3 weeks straight with nothing changing. That can kind of wear on you too. It feels like you're just watching the same games over and over again. Even the way they set up webcams for players, even the way they conduct interviews, all of it. Everything, I think, leads to better experiences, and it usually leads to people wanting to push for just doing better. Like, when Flashpoint came into the scene, we saw more skits from ESL. When WePlay came into the scene, we saw a lot of people start to use AR in more interesting and fascinating ways. So, I'm a big fan of TOs coming back into the space, as I think they're going to drive up competition.
We did a similar point like this on the episode after the major, where it was, might even be my point, that like the circuit would basically go back to what it used to be, where there was loads of TOs and there was loads of events. I already made the point that, like, I actually think for every category of individual, except maybe ESL, this is actually a positive, because basically if people don't know, the implication here is that Valve themselves have sort of behind the scenes told ESL, like, put your dick back in your pants and play nice. Because before that, they didn't like expressly tell ESL, like, you have to like play nice, but it's more like they just wouldn't let you take the whole calendar. So spoiler, like, the joke is, if in Valve's mind ESL was allowed to have 71%, then they went to 70.89%. like, there you go, Valve, there you go, we took just what we were allowed to take. So the key thing is, unless you force ESL out, because they've got Pro League, and then they've got like the fact that, by the way, they don't do it out of the kindness of their hearts, guys. The reason why they use the world ranking to invite you to events is it also incentivizes you to attend more ESL events to get your world ranking up, because they have most of the circuit. It's a very cleverly designed system where the one set of tournaments you can't opt out on, even though Team Spirit partly disagrees, is ESL events. They're supposed to be the ones you have to try and attend. It's why, if you don't know, all the lineups that get made brand new and lose their ranking points, the reason why the first 3 weeks of a new lineup is a nightmare is you have to play 1 million ESL qualifiers to try and get to all the lands. And if you don't make it, you shower luck for months, as Team Liquid found out. So that's actually why the Chengdu invite last minute from with getting call spot was like a big deal, because they got like some redemption finally. So I would just say, on the specifics of those two companies, because obviously I've worked with both two companies, one is, the good thing about PGL, even though it could easily on a different show be spun as a bad thing, is they have a very different perspective on talent hires to any other TO in the scene. Like, I can tell you for years, certain massive TOs have gone off very stupid things, like, does Reddit hype someone? Even though we all know Reddit is 100 people in Anorak, so have no social life, pretending to be 100,000 people in a fan base. Then you have other TOs where, this is a great one, they just go off stupid human interest things, like, look, but he's a young, clean-cut guy, like, he'll go down well with fans. Like, are you Calvin Klein or something? What are you talking about, you daft cunt? Can he actually do analysis? Can he commentate? You know, they have weird ideas. I mean, one that you'll love, by the way, is sometimes, you know, those sometimes people on broadcast, you're like, why is this person on? They're not even good. That's like some Hollywood network TV shit where some bozo executive's like, I'm going to put this guy in and he's going to be like my pick, and so then I'll get all the credit when he becomes awesome. Like, there's so many reasons. The difference is, PGL's reason is actually a very simple one. It's kind of the old world. They just have pre-existing relationships with people. So if you are someone like Richard Lewis, when he used to not work for Ents, Nartu used to always be on the Ents. No one remember that. He used to be on the Ents team when he worked with Ents guys. But obviously, people like Blair is a good example. He's been hired to many of them. If he was still around, I can tell you, they'd hire Sadakist again. He just obviously, he's on Voldemort status now. We have to pretend he doesn't exist and that we don't know why he left the scene. And, you know, whatever. I don't know, he just went through it. I guess he just got Thanos, he got fucking Thanos snapped out of reality by Gaules, didn't he? So whatever, Gaules, you won that one. And then, so PGL, the interesting thing already to me is they're not just going to go with like the current hype. They're going to go with their own approach. I also think for Star Ladder, and also I'll give it to PGL in this sense that like they have been able, they're one of the only TOs as far as I know that's actually made the business of esports work. Now, I will say, it's not like they're the only ones, but they have done it cynically. They're from Romania. They use people that work very, very cheaply and they make them double up on hours. And pretty sweet. I don't know what the like health and safety laws are in these countries or how overtime pay works in certain countries. The reason I say, though, that everyone sort of does it is, before anyone gets on their high horse, why do you think ESL went to all those events in Poland, guys? Oh, they'll tell you it's because it's the best country of all time and the fans are the best. They went there because it's cheap as fuck. Like, spoiler, go look up what famous events have been in the sport deck, guys. Let me know. Any, like, fucking, what, World Cup finals in there? Give me a fucking break. Like, it's all stuff like women's, like, fucking basketball final for, like, Middle Europe or something. Like, it's some shit from the 70s or 80s, guys. So, like, the point is, every TO has that angle. So, they have that approach. For Star Ladder, I'll actually say this. Star Ladder have never been given the credit they deserved in this scene, in the sense that they were the innovators for formats. They were the ones who ran one of the best tournaments of all time, in my opinion, that one that Mouse Sports won over Na'Vi, where it was best of three Swiss system, guys. As in, even the losing team played three best of threes, and anyone who went 2-2 played five before the playoffs. That was a fucking amazing tournament, because it was stacked, and it had a sick format, so they've also done plenty of other ones. If you ever go through history, they've tried almost every format. They did Double Elim before. People don't know this. They've done like round robin into just the single Olympic. They've done every format, because one thing I always appreciate about Star Ladder is they knew they weren't ESL. They knew they would never be number one. Well, when you're not number one, you actually can do that as a pivot. You can sort of like experiment a bit. You can try new things out. Also, if you don't know, they are actually essential, a company like Star Ladder. Like DreamHack, almost every talent came through Star Ladder first. That's where people who now ESL is happy to hire, like Harry and Hugo, they couldn't get a fucking sniff at an event back when I used to work with ESL. But I saw them at every Star Ladder. And as I joked with Hugo when he was on the episode, they had to grind. They had to come to Star Ladder, by the way, and then fuck off after the group stage sometimes while the rest of us stayed and did the event. I mean, the maddest one, as Hugo said, was he did that in fucking China. He flew all the way to China with a visa, did the group stage. Then when the playoffs were coming, we were like, oh, but what game are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm nipping off now, like with his fucking bag. Like, what the fuck? But I'll give them credit. It proves they've experimented across the board. So I'll just wrap it up by saying this. I think the best thing about having loads of TOs is, because it's not League of Legends with like a unified governing body, people are going to try to make their broadcast different, whether that's the talent they hire, the format they use, by the way, location of the events. Like, I'll tell you an obvious one to me. This is one people haven't even thought of. Not that many people really are desperate to go to China or an esports they've maybe already been. But I tell you what, a lot of you fuckers in Counter-Strike would like to go to South Korea, right? You've heard all those stories about StarCraft. Well, I'll tell you what, not only have I actually done an event, I think was even run by fucking PGL, that was like a Kesper Korean Asia Minor back in like 2016 or something, that was in Korea. But because they're partnered with Perfect World, they're going to do events in that region. They will work with local partners and go beyond Europe. So there's actually all sorts of interesting details. You can have obviously different talent lineups. You can even have a world where, let's see if any of them have the balls to do this, like eventually, if you're willing to pump the prize money up, because notice the one thing no one knows yet is what the prize money for all these tournaments is going to be. Who's going to have the most? Who's going to have the biggest circuit? Are they going to make it where you have to attend X amount of it? That'd probably be the ESL approach to qualify to a grand final, which is where the Mega Millions are. Whatever approach they take, the interesting thing is, if there's wiggle room and you want to experiment again, then maybe if you're like a smaller one, like a Star Ladder, yeah, you can't beat ESL for the week to week to week, you know, the IEMs, the ESL One, Cologne. But I'll tell you what, maybe you do something like you just put all your money in a mega final. Maybe you have like a $10 million mega final, like all of a sudden every team wants to qualify for at the end of the season. So if you think of the last few years, I think the last few years essentially were only acceptable for 2022 because in your brain you were like, we used to have that COVID shit, so we never had any events, did we? It's cool to have events again. Now I wanted it like this again, even though the players know they do. Because as I said earlier, when they don't qualify to one of those ESL qualifiers, they hate having a month and a half off and just online to having to play fucking CCT online and pretend like it matters. But you're like G2 with fucking Monacy. You're like, yeah, come on, Monacy. This is like just like the major, mate. Carry this game. By the way, if we win, it means nothing for your resume. Brilliant. But if you lose, by the way, you're total bombs. Like, who the fuck likes that? You'd rather be at Star Ladder. You'd rather go to a PGL tournament that had like not all the best teams. Maybe it's like Chengdu. Maybe has two top teams, three middle teams and two randoms. Like, I actually think that was one of the best things the CS circuit had. And then finally, if you're someone who's a fan of people like Donk who were just coming up, doesn't it fucking blow that he's played two events this year? Two whole events. We're in fucking the end of April already. When that circuit exists, someone like that, by April, will have played five events. That's the scene I love in Counter-Strike. And that's what games like League of Legends can never come close to. So, yeah, I agree. Good point. Any, you want to add some more? It sounded like you had some more you held back, so come on.
Yeah, no, I just want to kind of poke some holes that I think the community might see as a negative, but I think I could turn it into something of a maybe a positive, or at least shift the responsibility off of some of the parties. So, for example, I think player burnout is probably going to be one of the things that people are going to say, you know, there's, I pretty much put together a calendar of all the tournaments. It's on my Twitter. And there's like less than like, I think the biggest gap between tournaments is like 7 days, like 1 week, minus the amount of time before a major, when I think all tournaments are like, okay, no man's land, no tournaments during this time. But basically, I like the fact that it's kind of like Valve's free market approach, as much as you can say, even though there's only four TOs, that the player burnout argument, I think, can now firmly be shifted onto organizations. I think organizations are the ones that are going to have to be picking and choosing which tournaments to attend. And if there is an issue with player burnout, I think we as a community can now point to the teams and organizations and say, why did you sign up for this many tournaments if your players can't handle it? So that's one thing that I kind of like, is being able to at least put responsibility on a different party other than the players or the TOs. Another thing that I would love to hear what you guys have to say about it is, I think that it may diminish the prestige of Katowice and Cologne as the two big IEM tournaments. And that may be due to prize money, but also due to scheduling. If some, like you said, Duncan, if someone wants to attend a tournament, you know, not in Poland, then, you know, they're going to be shifting away from Katowice. I would argue that we saw that this year. You know, most teams that got knocked out of Katowice early, even if it was just, it might have just been an excuse, but everyone basically said, yeah, we're using this as a warm up for the major.
Right.
Which was a big letdown in my opinion, because, you know, Katowice for me has always been, you know, pretty much on a major tier, although, you know, unofficial major, next to Cologne. And it just felt like, you know, that kind of sucked that people were just saying, yeah, it was a warm up for the major and we're just going to move on. And I feel that with more tournaments, with how crowded the schedule is going to be, I feel like teams are going to be ramping up for the major. I mean, every major, every tournament that we're going to see out of these TOs is going to be basically an RMR. And we all, you know, we talked about, or you guys have discussed in the past, the pressure of the RMRs. I think we're going to see some very high pressure tournaments. We're going to probably see some dilution of talent. You know, Vitality might not be attending the same tournament as FaZe, for example, but yeah, so I am a little worried about what's going to happen to the Colognes and Katowices of the circuit.
I've got a little thing I'll pick up on what you said at the end there, which is that's actually also what will make the whole TO balance of power very interesting, because what you said there, it's actually something I prefer. Instead of having one RMR where you pretend like winning Katowice doesn't exist, like, remember, Spirit could have failed the RMR, they wouldn't even be at the major. Like, that's just the way our circuit works. I want it to be like tennis, where actually the tournaments you play is what qualify you to the majors. So I actually like the idea that the tournament matters now and like the points matter. But what you're saying there, it used to work like this on prize money. Now it will work like this on points, which is, you know, back in the day, you'd have the medium-sized events, and sometimes you'd have, like, Fnatic would go to one, but, like, NIP wouldn't. But then the next time, NIP would go to the one that Fnatic wasn't at, right, when these are the top teams. Because that used to be based on prize money. What they'd do is, why would we all go to a medium-sized DreamHack and kill ourselves trying to win it? If you're going to this one, fuck it, you can beat, like, Dignitas or something. I'll go to the one 2 weeks later where I'll get the 50K. I think they'll do that with points. Like, as you're saying, basically. And by the way, I like this factor. Say you're actually a great team that had imagine if Astralis had kept the super team, right? So you have this super team you spent millions on, but it's, you're shit in the bed, you haven't had the results. They would actually potentially in the circuit be able to just go ham on the last 4 months if you wanted, before the majors, try and attend every single medium to large size event, stack as many points. Because if you don't know, in tennis, this is what people do. When you're on the ATP, the top players don't have to play every event, they can pick and choose. So sometimes you literally do this if you need to get your world ranking to a certain level, like you're at five or whatever, but you know if you win these two small tournaments, it'll boost you over because the other guys wait until the Grand Slam or something. So I think that even could even be a positive too, because I could also see that being a world where now it's not just because, like, we all attend ESL. Maybe sometimes the third best team wants to, maybe G2, for example, maybe G2 gets sick of losing all these events. And they go, you know what? Fuck it. There's a smaller event that none of the top three teams in the world are attending. Fuck it, we'll go. Maybe we'll go and we win it. And then it's a little perk us up again, make our fans believe in us. Someone honestly gets an MVP. Like, there's a lot of reasons you might do it. So I think if anything, that'll add to the scene. Any thoughts, Maui?
The thing with burnout is kind of like, I feel like it was sort of a product of the fact that what spurred so many people to play so many tournaments was, sure, it's partially your org's obligations and the fact that you think that you need to be in more events so that your team is seen more because you're basically promoting your org the entire time. But the other thing is that it was HLTV ranking. That's another reason that everybody was signing up for everything, because the points on HLTV, just a reminder, I feel like, I mean, it's important to bring this up every now and then if people forget, is that the points are purely additive. That if you enter a tournament and it's for HLTV ranking points, which used to determine so many qualifier slots, you don't actually lose points no matter what if you are playing games. If you lose a game to a team, your HLTV ranking doesn't go down. So you're incentivized to play everything you can. If you are actually punished by losing to, say, like when G2 loses to the Mongols today or whatever, they're not actually going to be punished in terms of ranking. It's that the Mongols can win points. I mean, the way that you technically are punished is that maybe a team can pass you because they beat you and they get more points, but it's not that you're actually just losing points. So even if you're fifth in the world losing to 25th in the world,
it, like, that doesn't really hurt your standing other than maybe you could have gained a couple more points. So that's why people were so willing to just jump into everything. And it's why you saw teams that were just like complain about that stuff, because they know that their ranking to big events is predicated on them just playing absolutely everything and hopefully scrounging together a few wins in there and maybe going on a nice run here or there.
Oh, the one thing I'll say on the burnout is just this. Even though I do acknowledge the main problem esports has is people have these stupid assumptions they make. I mean, obvious one would be, you'll hear it a million times every time people bring up women's esports. They'll go, well, there's no reason in the game why anyone would be indifferent. It's like, well, that's a fucking bold statement to make about human physiobiology and how it would work with a fucking piece of equipment. But okay, I guess you can just make grand statements with absolutely zero fucking science. Just pull it out your ass. You just want it to be true. So similarly, I do notice that people will ignore. It's why every fan doesn't want to hear when you go, I play 9 hours a day. They go, huh, playing a game 9 hours a day. I have to work. And it's like, no, they mean work, you idiot. Like, they're not having fun. Yeah. They're grinding. And also, at work, you're on Reddit right now at work, dickhead. Like, he's actually, he can't be in the, well, except for that story that fucking pimp told about some of the TL players playing WoW between rounds of scrims. Like, in theory, they're playing the game. They're not actually, like, tabbing out on fucking Reddit, like, update. They're not doing that, are they? So I will say, we don't actually know the limits of the human mind. Like, we don't actually know what overtraining is. Spoiler, when I've looked into like Korean esports, I think essentially they do just overtrain and they just burn themselves out, but then there's a guy ready to replace them. But I will just point this out, because I do feel like every now and then people in CS need to come back to fucking reality. So are you ready? I know that people watching this show and in this call have watched either the NBA or the NHL. I know it as a fact. So here's a detail that you might need like to know. The regular season alone's fucking 82 games in a year. That's before the playoffs. The playoffs are best of seven series. Motherfucker, you're complaining about playing like 100 games of CS. They're playing a sport where in hockey, you're allowed to fucking punch people in the head and body check them to the wall. And then in the NBA, you're literally just jumping and doing that, like, impact on your fucking ankles all day long. Like, if they can do 100 games of that, I think you can boot up this next pistol round, mate. So that whole thing to me, I actually think that's based on other shit. Like, I think the biggest problem in Counter-Strike really was the travel. It was that, if you remember that famous one, probably the most famous incident of burnout, it's actually how those Astralis players got those doctor's notes and didn't have to play in 2020, if you remember, was they did that circuit that Richard often points out after the major, where after the major, it was like they did like ESL New York into like fucking DreamHack Malmo into like, I think like, depending on which team you're in, like, I think then they did IM Beijing. Then it was like, if you ever saw the route they took around the map, it was like some fucking old school like point and click adventure game on the map. Like, holy shit, like, this is Monkey Island. So what the fuck's going on here? Like, the real problem difference is, in sports, you get to play half your games at home, don't you? You can go back to the crib. And I think that's the bigger issue. I think what burns you out is just permanently being on the road, being in the grind. And also, by the way, that only applies to the top 10 teams. I notice, as usual, they speak for everyone. I just said earlier, remember the circuit we had in 2022 and 2023? It fucking sucks being the 18th best team. You might get a tournament every 3 months. Meanwhile, everyone else is like, this is perfect. I just, Goldilocks syndrome, just right. This is just, yeah, because your face can't, you can't, you're in every semi-final. So I will say, as usual, there's always some spectrum to that shit. Right. That's obviously a monster first point. So, Maui, what is your good point?
Mine is that I'm not going to give Kassad all the credit for that take he made a while back, which was that they were the best team outside of Europe. But I've been swayed heavily by the Mongols and their style of play, their level of play, the individuals on the team. Overall, I just said that the good point is the Mongols. The G2 victory that they had today was incredibly impressive, and it's off the back of them just consistently delivering, taking down top opposition, and showing that any player on that team can practically have a pop-off. They're the dominant team in the Asian region, and on top of that, already at ESO Pro League, they took down Falcons, they took down G2. At the Major, I think their opposition maybe could have, like, you would have wanted it to be a little bit harder, I say, because the teams that they ended up losing to were some of the teams that we kind of ended up raving about. Like, I mean, they lost to Na'Vi, they lost to Vitality, they lost to Pain, and Big Azera was just a monster in that kind of stuff. But, like, in terms of Asia, it's clear that they're the best, and the time that they're spending in Europe is paying off. And now that they're beating actually
true top teams like Falcons and G2. I guess the debate's out on Falcons if they're a top team, but they are beating, they beat G2 decidedly today. And it was very, it was a confident victory based off of the back of, to me, like, people are going to look at the stat sheet, but if they didn't watch it, they're just going to think, okay, or if they didn't watch the game, they're just going to think, okay, 9-10 popped off. He's the Ropper. Surely he just had a big moment. I thought the calling was really good too from the Mongols. One thing that I really like about them when I watch them play is that they really, like, I actually don't love them all the time in default. I actually don't think they're the most individually driven team, but it's when they group up or when they have to make a mid round off of like a 5v or a 4v4 or anything like that. I think Blitz has been a great in-game leader, and him and Senzu do great jobs in terms of map control together. I think that Techno is just like a guy that you can really rely on his part of the map if he's going for some kind of lurk. I think 9-10 himself has just been he's been sometimes a streaky opper, like at the major in some of their losses, he was not really helping them through that, and he wasn't like that X factor difference maker, but I would say that he's a pretty safe like top 15 opper in the world right now, especially off of the G2 performance. It's very easy to say that. And then the one guy that I think I'd say the jury's a little bit out on him has been Mazzino, where I feel like they're putting this youngster who is, if I'm not mistaken, he's still 16 years old, by the way, and he is kind of their shakiest and streakiest player for me, where it's just like they're putting him on one side of the map. They're not giving him a lot of resources or help. He's playing extremities, lurk position, anchor stuff. And some games he's going to pop off and his headshot percentage is unbelievable. His first bullet accuracy is crazy, but it's about decision making for him. And I'm not sure if he's always there. But that being said, they have done a great job, Blitz and the Mongols as a unit, to mitigate the deficiencies that players like Mazzino have on the roster, where sometimes they aren't so strong if they're all just spread out, but they group up well. And when they play off of each other, when it's a prime Mongols game, it's like, it was like when I was watching Cloud9 in like late round situations, how they're just really well oiled. Their fundamentals are very strong. I don't see too many bad peaks. And for a region that has been so obviously marred by the fact that it's an individualistic play style, where the individual, where they always like you don't know, you never know, they can pop off, they might do something random. I think the Mongols are actually a much more certain quantity, which is a really welcome sight, given that the Asia region has just for such a long time been more of a, ooh, can they pull off an upset? It's almost like now Mongols are becoming a team that's, if you're just not on your game, they're going to be good because they have a well-founded system behind them.
Yeah, I totally agree. I really love watching Mongols play. I thought that, you know, speaking of their mid-round and just giving props to, I believe it was Henry on the cast, but just that one play on Ancient where Mongols threw a smoke between CT spawn and B, and Nico like had to check it because they're, you know, do they respect the smoke? Do they not? And it perfectly just peeled them off site, leaving Monacy alone. And Mongols were able to group up and take the site. That's just one example of many that Mongols are capable of doing. And they seem like the perfect gatekeeper team, I would say. Like they have such a solid floor, a high floor where they'll keep out any team that's really not tactically prepared, but individually, skill-wise, they're not going to be, I mean, they took out G2, but it's not like, you know, they don't have that star opper, for example, in like 9-10, that's going to elevate them and win them rounds against like top teams like FaZe, for example, at least in my opinion. Mazzino is, yeah, like shaky, and like you said, he's playing those extremity positions, and he has come up clutch in so many rounds with just, you know, random 3Ks and just pretty much out aiming some tier one players, which was kind of amazing. But and for me, Mongol seems like the kind of team that they're just going to get better. It seems like after every official, they come back from a game, kind of break it down, they're able to understand what they're doing wrong, what they're doing right, and then elevate their game for the next time. Kind of like a, I don't know, like a Rocky kind of thing. They get beat up, but then they come back stronger, and they just, I just feel like they haven't even hit their peak yet. I think that they're still on the rise, and I think they're going to keep getting better the more they play in Europe, the more officials they play. And yeah, I don't think any team in Asia is going to even come close to challenging them. I think Kassad was pretty much right. Outside of Europe, they are the best team, in my opinion, as well.
By the way, he did also do that intentionally with like a shit-eating grin to try and like dunk on Call and Team Liquid was the premise. Because at the time, I think they beat Call at like Ganymedes or some tournament like that. So he was using that angle. But the thing is, though, to take that as a bigger point, this is easily the best Asian team that ever played CSGO or CS2. If people don't know, in CS 1.6, there actually was two amazing teams. There was the Tai Lu teams at the end in 1.6 who were Chinese who were pretty skilled. There was the MVP / We Made Fox type guys who were pretty good also. They even like won tournaments. The difference is in CSGO and CS2, the game was even less involved in their scene, and by now you'd already had like League of Legends, Valorant, all these. Like, if people don't know, the saddest thing if you're a fan of like Chinese or even Korean Counter-Strike is all the best players don't play our game, bro. They all play Valorant. Like, there's a guy, Cal Kang Kang, who plays like EDG in Valorant, who's like unbelievable mechanics. Like, you wish this guy played CS. There's people who were like the Overwatch players, they all went to Valorant because it's a little, it's another shooter that looks like that and has abilities, right? So they didn't come to Counter-Strike, sadly. So the key thing is, I'd almost given up in CS in past 1.6 that we'd ever have like a great team from Asia. Like, even that Tai Lu team that everyone remembers fondly with Ben Tet and somebody, like, they were sort of like, they were a one map wonder. Like, they could catch you on one map, they could catch you in a Swiss system, but it's not like they would make the playoffs. It's not like they would make a deep run. They weren't going to beat you in a best of three. The difference here is this: one, this team does, and literally they've just done two that I'm talking about now. You want to go back to last year, they've won a gang of best of threes on LAN at big tournaments against real top 10 and top 15, top 20 ranked teams in the world. Best of threes, guys. Like, where you actually have to prove it over the whole series. Like, normally these teams, especially in terms of like EPL, you can lose the first map to some shitty team. You'll just win it back on the next one. You're just much better than them. They already have made these teams. You can tell, here's the other thing that's cool. I agree with the playing style, by the way. I've also, this is one thing I do appreciate, is they have like a mad decisive style. Like you say, what you can make like an initial play, but they don't just play like proper handshake chess of like, right, you did the correct move, I do the correct response. They'll just do shit. Like, if you saw how that Falcons game ended, Falcons thought they were going to win that game, and then all of a sudden Mongols did like a whole bunch of like group pushes, double peeks, like double flash in, and then three people peek on your screen. I've always thought the most underrated thing in Counter-Strike, if you're the underdog, is just have a numbers advantage in a fight. People stupidly play like it's normal CS and I'm supposed to make my star beat Nico in a 1v1. No, what you do is you have two people peek him at once, and if he can shoot us both in the head, there you go, I have to just tip my hat to you. But I'll tell you what, it's fucking hard. Like, it's why classically, I actually think in the modern day, it's only utility that ruined the banana on Inferno. That used to be one of the great equalizers. If you gangbang the banana with four people, the two people in the site have a pretty hard time. Like, it's not 1.6, they're not doing a big spray down and getting like a fucking ace. They probably get traded after they get one or two kills. So, first of all, they actually play the right style if you're an underdog team. And then the reason why they win in these games, guys, isn't just even the style. It's that they actually are fragging. The actual fragging is fucking legit. Like, if you go and look their stats up now as you're watching this video, you're going to think to yourself cynically, oh, I'll bet these are pumped up by a load. No, there's one Asian tournament called Extreme Land at the beginning of the year. The rest is all the events you've watched. It's fucking, by the way, they played Team Spirit, guys, and had a 14-16 map against them at fucking Katowice. Then they had the RMR. They were in the major. I know everyone forgets this. A lot of us were picking them in the fucking pick them, weren't we, in the first round? Like, they were in the real tournaments that all the best teams have played at. So when you go and see that fragging, and you see like two or three of them are like decent ratings, and one's pretty good. That's against the teams that you want. If this team wasn't from fucking Mongolia and they were just from like pick a cut Romania, you'd all be massive fans and mega hyped about this squad. I think it's just the whole thing of like, lol, who cares about Asian CS, mixed with like, you just remember years ago they had the Mongols with machine gun, it was kind of a bit of a gimmicky team. This team is for real. Like, I actually keep saying this. I mean, they did end up beating Falcons, by the way. Falcons they barely beat, G2 they smashed. So get at me, all the fucking G2 defenders. Where the fuck are you at? So I was told this means Falcons should just disband the whole team because they lost a 13-11 fucking ancient game. But what I would say about this team is this. They've already mega exceeded any other Asian team in the CSGO onwards era of Counter-Strike. And they're like this close for real when you watch these tournaments at like making a playoff run. Like, sooner or later, they are going to have one LAN where they just do a little run like this, but it's maybe a smaller format, and they'll just make it into the bracket. Remember, this is another team that's never going to be in a fucking blast, are they? Like, so at the time, they had limited tournaments they could enter. This is another team, by the way, if you want to tie into the first point, that's going to fucking love having PGL and Star Series. Let's have more events in China. Let's have events all around the world. Let's have events like, again, when a team like, let's say like a Team Liquid, or pick another squad that's like fair, a Furia, say one of them skips a star ladder, this is the team that'll come in next, and the world rankings even mean they'll be right there. So I'm actually a big fan of this team. I really enjoy watching them play. They're not quite there yet, but I agree also, by the way, this hasn't been a flash in the pan. This is like, what, 3 or 4 events now, guys, that they've done this. Like, this is pretty legit. That's why I say, I'm going the other way, rather than being like, well, they'll fall off. Actually, I think they're probably only that far from having the composure to make one playoff run. And then who the fuck knows? Because at that point, everything's on the table. So I think it's a fucking dope team. Like, if you haven't been following them, this is actually one of those squads you should go and watch. Like, this, you'll actually find there's way more substance than you think. So yeah, I think they're bangers. Right, okay then, we'll go on to my good point. Right, I'm very specifically on this not going to talk about his team, because that'll be one of the other points. Here's the way I'm going to frame Monacy's play right now. Right, I like anyone who's the best player in the world. Like, people don't know this, I like Zywoo. What I don't like is annoying French people who aren't Zywoo telling me everything about Zywoo. That I don't enjoy too much. Zywoo's play, straight fire, isn't it? But, even though this year he's had a few slip-ups, but enough about his T-shirt. But anyway, that's just fucking embarrassing, mate. That's just embarrassing that you'd even put that picture on the internet, you absolute clownery. So, okay. But then again, I guess his management have been known to get tricked a few times. Anyway, enough about that, right? So what I'm going to say about Monacy goes like this. This is the only player ever who actually scratches the itch if you were a fan of Kenny S or Simple. It's the only player to ever play. Nobody else was like that. Like I said, Guardian was an unbelievable awkward. It wasn't at all like Kenny S's style. When people like Zywoo came along, yeah, he might have been the best player. He wasn't Simple, though, because what we love about Simple is this. Simple, the reason why I think everyone who isn't a Zywoo fan acknowledged him as the GOAT of Counter-Strike, all versions, by the way, is because he didn't just put up the numbers that are impossible. He did. He didn't just win 1 million MVPs. He did. He didn't just win the major with the highest rate. He did all those things while playing one of the most aggressive brands of Counter-Strike ever fucking witnessed. Like, he really is the guy where, it turns out he was like 2 or 3 years late. If like Valve told me they had some sort of Warhammer 40k scryer who saw into the future and they knew Simple was coming and that's why they nerfed the AWP in 2015, I'd actually go, you know what, fair play then, you're right, you actually did need to do that, because I've not only always said he would have been insane on the pre-nerf AWP, but bro, he did use it like a shotgun after the nerf. He was using those no-scopes. Like, I told you, I always said to him, mate, whatever technique you're using for training, no one's even trying it because no one's even going for the jumping no-scopes you go for, but you're hitting them all. Like, so I've never seen any player that came close to that. But Modesty right now, he had flashes of it before when he'd hit a great shot. His actual game now is like fucking Simple's, mate. The aggression level, the willingness to go into any multi-kill scenario. Like, he also literally uses the AWP. Like, he doesn't understand it's a ranged weapon and you want to, like, sort of get back on people. Like, this guy doesn't give a fuck there's only 5 bullets in the clip, guys. He's just going to get 2 or 3 kills with it. And he even has that thing, finally, which is super dope, which is now you actually see the other players in the server all know he's that fucking dude, and I don't want to get into a fucking duel with this guy. We're, like, avoiding him. If possible, by the way, it's like the old Kobe thing. Let's just let the rest of the team fucking go off. We'll just rush to their side. We're not fucking going where this guy is. When you get to that status, there's not many people have ever been there, guys. Maybe Donk's going to get there, but, like, it was, like, Simple, maybe Zywoo, Nico back in the day. These are the only players that you literally see where they are on the map and go, I'm calling mid-round, go to the other side. Like, that's the only players you do. This guy deserves that status. So it's not just that he's the best player for me. It's that I actually finally, I mean, I've been waiting ages for Simple to come back. Obviously, Kenny S is never coming back. It's just cool to have a player that is like the ultimate playmaker and can be the best while also being a showman. I think that's dope.
Yeah, for me, Monacy is in the rare category of players where even if it's 1v5, even if he's like on a deagle, there's always, there is that glimmer of hope that he can pull something off. And there's only a few other players that can do that. Zywoo, Simple, and Nico. Basically, like, it happens a lot when you see Nico on a pistol round and it's like 1v4 and the other team is just like hiding. No one even wants to try and take a duel against him because they know that he can completely turn around on his head. Monacy has that same aura, that same vibe where if he has an AWP, a deagle, a pistol on a pistol round, he can turn the round in his favor because not only does he have the technical and mechanical ability, but he's just very smart. He knows, you know, it's no secret that he studies the game at a very fine level like ROPS, but he just, the way that he abuses his knowledge to put himself in situations, I mean, case in point, when he throws that Molotov, you know, against on Dust2, And Anders famously calls out, oh, he throws a random Molotov, but like Monacy just knew that he'd be able to see over it, obscuring the vision of his opponent, and he'd be able to take a duel in his favor. That's just what he does. And his ability to playmake and with the most influential gun in the game, the AWP, makes it all that much better. You know, there's consequences of using an AWP, but with Monacy, it just seems like there are no consequences. He's just a beast. He's going to turn the game on its head in his favor no matter what. And you don't get that vibe from a lot of players, but when you watch Monacy, it's just like, okay, when he has this gun in his hands, there's a chance that he just completely carries and wins the game no matter what.
It's so disappointing right now that G2's in the state that they are when Monacy is this good, because it just feels like you're getting so frequently these wasted performances, and I feel like maybe people are even wondering, like, why do so many pundits in the space get so frustrated with G2? It's mostly actually because of Monacy. It's just like, if getting this guy's talent, like, there's no other real player I could say. You put him on any other team in the world and he improves them. Like, anybody. Like, I don't really think, like, Even a player of Donk's caliber maybe is the only one that's coming up to this. Maybe Zywoo in some ways too, but like, you could put Monacy for every other AWPer on every single other team, and I would be, with the lone exception of those two other players, I would just take Monacy for, I'd take Monacy for Brokey, I'd take Monacy for Wonderful, I'd take Monacy for Torzi, I'd take Monacy for like every AWPer on practically every other team. I would even take him for Shiro on Spirit. I would take Monacy for Shiro on Spirit. I think the team gets better. That it's just, I'm so, it's, some people just throw out the term superstar too liberally, and I almost want to reserve it, because how could you put somebody else in this tier when Monacy is already occupying it? Like, I don't want it to be a crowded group of superstars. Like, again, Donk, Zywoo, that's it for me right now. I don't see anybody else on these other teams that is doing what he's doing. In a fun way, Brokey's kind of showing something like it lately. He's actually kind of getting there, but it's still not the same level of consistency. It's still not the same with every single rifle, and it's still that Brokey's doing it with a team that's winning around him. And so, in an unfortunate way, it does feel like I slightly do diminish the accomplishment, because it's like there's a win by committee that is also going through Brokey, whereas right now it's Monacy versus the world. So maybe we're going to marvel a little bit more at how drastically better Monacy is than the rest of his team, whereas somebody like Brokey, it's just a little bit harder for me to give him all of the credit, because if you're winning games with FaZe 13-5 anyways, like, I'm not sure, was that Frozen that was dropping a bomb? Was that actually the random rain performance? Was it Rops just locking his stuff down? But it's like, when it's Monacy, he's doing absolutely everything for this team. He's rotating everywhere he can. He's trying to win every single clutch that he can. And his utility usage in late round situations has ascended. It's like, if in the beginning of Monacy, when he was first joining G2, one of the things I remember noticing is that, like, a lot of his incredible clutches were based off of pure gun work and the occasional, like, okay, that was like a nice little piece of utility, but now it is that he is finding more tricks than anybody across all of the maps. And so if you give him a single grenade, a single flash, a single smoke, single molly, you're going to find out in a moment's notice the best way you could possibly use that wall pushing skill to the absolute limit that CS2 has to offer. So Monacy right now is, by and large, the best player in the world. I know the debate was there earlier with Donk, but it's unfortunately, we just aren't seeing enough from Donk. Like, he's not playing Pro League. We're going to see him smurf against some people again. He might be the best out there, but, like, at the same time, one thing I will say, Donk can't op like Monacy, but Monacy can rifle incredibly well. Even when he has a rifle, I still expect greatness, and he so frequently delivers it.
He almost fucked up there. He wanted to complete the cemetery and say, and then put Monacy can rifle like Donk, but even he knew then, shut my mouth, how dare I say that before the devil catches me out. Yeah, exactly. At least you pulled it back. By the way, people don't know, the episode I did of Feed the Trolls, which came out today with Tech Girl and Launders, isn't actually about who's the best now with Donk and Monacy. It's trying to predict like who'll be the best overall. And spoiler, I'll give you some fourth wall shit on that. I actually even said at the beginning, I just offered Launders, you could pick either of them, mate. Like, you can make the case for either. Like, obviously, it's so debatable, isn't it? Like, there's not really an obvious answer. It's just they're in different places in their careers. So, okay, let's move on to the bad now. So, Armchair Agile, what is your bad point?
Yeah, so my bad point is the community's relationship with the map pool. So, the context behind this is maybe two weeks ago, maybe earlier this month, Madger from Eternal Fire had tweeted out that bringing the map pool, adding four maps to the map pool to make it a map pool of 11, Cash, Dust 2, Train, Cobble, more entertainment, more strategic, and the veto will be more difficult to predict. And
okay,
this kind of it gave me the vibes of when you were on a show, Thorin. This is, you were on a show with Get Right and Tommy and Semler, and Get Right just out of nowhere is like, why don't we just add more maps to the map pool? And you just come back at him so bad. It's like, that's what people say when
Get Right
said, oh, okay.
It was something to the effect of like, things you say when you know your career is over. And it was like,
this was when they had like two maps that they were good on in an IP. So the joke is like, yeah, no shit, you want new maps, mate. The other ones aren't fucking working for you. So, okay, you can have something similar here.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was giving me, is like, okay, like, you want more maps because, you know, maybe you want more more opportunities just to out aim teams. And maybe that's, you know, maybe he does think it'll be more entertaining. But I guess the community really loved that idea, or at least, you know, maybe his Turkish fans. And I just see a lot of takes about the map pool that just kind of irritate me. And, it, you know, it's purely opinion based, so anyone can say what they want about maps. But to me, the map pool, every map has a certain flavor and is testing teams on a certain element. Like, for example, Nuke tests your team's communications, rotation ability. And you don't want too many maps like Nuke in the map pool. And maybe you want some maps that are more puggy, like Dust 2, Mirage, some team where you can show off your map knowledge and have some gimmicks. But I mean, just, I think that seven maps is the right number. And I think that the maps that are in the map pool currently are good. Maybe except for Vertigo, I would personally trade it out for Train. But I see so often on Twitter or Reddit, just like people say, let's bring back Cash. That's like the most commonly requested map, Cash and Cobble. And for me, it's like the map pool, the current map pool already scratches that itch for me. Cobble, I think, is irrelevant if Overpass is in the pool, being a big map and holding on to key map control for rotation purposes. Cash, and I've agreed with Maui on this in the past, but I think Ancient is basically the natural and better version of Cash. Cash kind of is a little stale with its lack of skyboxes and allowing utility to fly in the right areas, and it kind of got a little stale. So for me, the map pool, I think, is in a good spot, and I think that bumping up the number of maps or you know, is not a good idea. I think that maybe changing the maps or at least reorienting where some things are on those sites might be a better idea than just totally adding maps or deleting maps and replacing maps like whatnot.
I would want different maps. I would just take Train. I would put Train in for Vertigo if I were to change anything. I feel like the discussions have been, what's annoying is that I had like a long session on my stream, like a discussion about Valve devs and why it's sometimes really frustrating to be at their whim because they just seem so absent at times. And map pool, it's like if they kind of just had their ears towards the space at all, I feel like the cries have been loud enough at this point that we as a community have mostly turned our backs on Inferno, and there are a lot of frustrations with Vertigo. And so when I think it was Moses on Talking Counter talked to the Valve devs about what's going on with Inferno, and he said, you know, it's just the most impossible thing to retake. The Valve devs said something to him like, oh, what makes it hard to retake? Like, he had to then write a thesis about what's going on with that map and why it's bad so that before they would even listen. And it's like, you know, if they just want to say that they're not paying attention, they can just say that too. Like, they don't have to act like they're trying to like 300 IQ and like try to play some kind of like Seven Seal games with Moses there. Like, it's not really, it's pretty obvious why it's hard to retake. Like, we don't have to go, we shouldn't have to explain everything with like, you know, 10 pages about it. So I feel like if they wanted to make things a little bit more interesting, I think they would also just like, I don't know if player numbers are good on Inferno, because I don't see anybody wanting to play that in Face It really either. So I'm kind of confused where they're going with that one and what data is driving them to keep it in the pool. I get what you mean with, like, I guess community reception to the map pool is kind of in a weird place. I mean, I would just turn a filter on for Major's tweets. I think I don't read them. I don't read them myself because I don't want to, like, hurt myself at all. So I probably, that's like my take on that. I don't, 11 map pool is just such a ridiculous idea. Like, if we want to see the quality of Counter-Strike go down, you could just say so, you know, like, there's only a finite amount of time, and there's already teams that are like Spirit that are good on 5 maps of their 6 map pool. They can't play Vertigo to the highest level either. And you kind of see that the limits are tested generally on that 6th map, on that 7th map. And so to have 11, like, what do we want for map? Like, if you counter pick people, do we want just people's count, like, anti-strat punish picks to just be victories in themselves? Like, because we're going to see a lot of really bad CS. And then I think what would happen is if we had an 11 map pool, we're just going to get a lot more decider map threes. Like, it's going to be a lot more map threes. There's going to be a lot less 2-0 victories, because you would probably think that the punish picks would be so powerful in that kind of veto that it's always going to go to this decider. And then it's just kind of like, it's almost like it actually becomes almost like a case for BO1s at that point, because it's like, why are we even playing these first two maps if two teams' strengths are so opposed on the punish picks to start off a series?
Oh, there's a lot there. So obviously I'll start with the major point, right? That one is fucking hilarious because of who's saying it. Like, his team is good on what, like 1.5 maps, motherfucker. Like, there's a reason why I thought it was a slam dunk Na'Vi was going to beat them in the major, because they were going to fucking veto the map that they're the best on. That was like the most obvious, like, you don't even need to be, even the idiot just looking on the HLTV last 3 months, the minimum 3 maps can see that one, but somehow fucking all these people just, I believe in the dream. It's like, that's not how CS works, you idiot. Like, the terrain is way more important than even sometimes who your players are. Then there's the whole factor, as Maui pointed out, bro, we haven't even got to a world, we never will, by the way, where, like, the top 10 are all good on 6 maps. I mean, look, most teams to this day, perma, there's not many teams, like, that actually have the balls to, like, float the perma generally, or perma about 3 different maps. By the way, notice they're only ever the absolute best teams in the whole world as well who do that. And then, as Maui said, Team Spirit, in theory, was the best team in the world until inactivity killed them. And they only played 5 maps. But you know why it was brilliant? Because good luck, like, picking the Vertigo into them. Like, why would they give a fuck? Like, in that scenario, yeah, you might win that. Then they just get whatever they want of the other 5. Like, well, great. We're brilliant. By the way, we might be the best on the other 5. Like, that's also how practice works, like Maui said. Fans have always done this. I did a video on it years ago where they're like, why don't they just work more on the other map? Like, that's like saying, why don't you just work 7 more jobs full time? I haven't got unlimited time. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You just figured it out. Did that just pop in your brain right there? That when you only have an hour, you can't spend more than that hour on whatever you spend that hour on. So we already just discussed how people say they're burned out and there's too many fucking tournaments. You want them to now practice 4 more maps. Meanwhile, has your team even practiced 5 maps, motherfucker? Yeah, exactly. Shut the fuck up. And then also, like Armchair IGL pointed out, magically, he wants all the fragging maps to come back in that aren't mega strat heavy. Bro, you don't need to play this game. It's called Search and Destroy Call of Duty on your fucking bike. This is Counter-Strike, dickhead. Counter-Strike is about, like, tactics. Tactics require thought, planning. You have to investigate the opponent. You have to read the defense. You don't just go, Zantares and Wikidia, shoot them in the head, and then go, I am like sort of Turkish and was around 20 years. Yeah, who gives a shit, mate? Who gives a shit? This is Counter-Strike, motherfucker. So already, please don't take the status I would give to, like, and did you know Glaive just said this, and go, did you know Magus just said this? Mate, we still don't even know how to say his name. That's how famous this guy is. So enough about that one. Enough about that one. Then we'll move on to the idea of, like, the actual maps themselves, right? My pet peeve goes like this. So I have to sit there and listen to everyone else's inane take. Oh, you know, you all think my Twitter's terrible. Motherfucker, I've been here 20 plus years and watched every great player and game. Imagine what it's like for me having to read all of your takes into my brain every day. So I sit there just consuming takes like fucking that guy out of fucking Brazil where he's strapped in that chair like, fucking hell, like just in his fucking death spiral. And I have to hear you bozos tell me like, Nico, like, Overpass is not even a good map. Like, okay, Nico, tell you what, you're a goat, so you can have that one. Then then I have to hear Maui tell me an Inferno isn't even good. Like, well, it's only probably the greatest map ever created in Counter-Strike. We'll
that's put that, Hugo. That
we'll
was
put,
Hugo.
Oh, that was Hugo then. Whatever. We'll put that to it. You agreed with him. You agreed with him. I said
Vertigo's the worst still. I still say okay. Vertigo's
all right, you can. I'll put that on Hugo then. Caster. He hasn't quite got the status of an equal, okay, so he's not there yet. That's suspect. And then I have these cheeky little bastards that like to pop in and tell me that, like, oh, pick another one, like Anubis, what's that doing in the map? It's like, no, Mirage was the other one. Remember, they all kept saying for years Mirage has played out. So let me just check. You're triggered by Inferno, Overpass, and Mirage. And he never even said the word fucking Vertigo. Vertigo, the joke is, no wonder, I'll tie it back in that point I just made, no wonder that's the best Eternal Fire map. That's not Counter-Strike. That's just a fucking retake simulator. That's just hold the bomb site. That's just people running on, and then we're just trying to shoot through smokes and shoot three people in the site. Like, I've always thought that's the most dog shit map of all time. Like, you take any criticism of the old version of Cash, and let's just compare it to fucking Vertigo, mate. It's night and day. That map looks like chess compared to fucking Vertigo, mate. There's all sorts of movements you can make, smokes, like fucking the battles are even interesting. In loads of crazy post plants, like, so I think the craziest thing already is people are being mega subjective, but they're pretending like we all agree that these maps suck. Well, spoiler, I don't think we all agree 4 out of the 7 maps fucking suck in Counter-Strike. Like, pick one or two. You can have one or two all the time. By the way, you'll notice I've changed my take over the years. I've sort of lightened up on Ancient. I don't particularly like Anubis, but I don't hate it in the same way as I did when Vertigo was brought into the pool, and I've pointed that point out. Where are all the great Vertigo games? I'm still waiting. It's been out since fucking 2019 or something now, guys. Like, I'm waiting for all these banger games I'm supposed to see. The difference is, Ancient has had some classics. I've even had the odd game. I mean, there's obviously that Na'Vi Phase 1 on Anubis. That was amazing at Blast Paris, right? So the other maps have had their status to earn it. My big problem is this. Most of the time when people complain about the maps, I actually think what they're complaining about is they are bored of Counter-Strike. Now, my problem with that is, can't relate, mate. Just told you, I watched it for 20 plus years. I would watch it for 20 more years as long as the maps are good and the players are good and the skill expression's good. So if you're bored of it, you know what? One, maybe just trim down how much you watch. Just watch the big tournaments. Don't watch every single tournament. Or, you know what? If you like fucking different maps, they're dog shit, by the way. This is why I wouldn't ask for loads of new maps, guys. Check out Valorant. That's a fucking banger game for maps, isn't it? That's like you're playing Roblox with Counter-Strike guns. It's fucking garbage, mate. Like, the maps, literally, here's the secret I'm going to do a video about or an article about soon. The dirty secret of Valorant is all the people from Counter-Strike fucking hate it and want to come back to Counter-Strike, but it is too late. They are in the new world and they can't go on a ship back to Ireland in this equation where they thought they were going somewhere dope, but they're actually somewhere that's worse. So the real problem you have with that is I think most people are just whinging about whatever. They're like, they think Inferno's played out, okay, but the problem is, what am I swapping it for? Because in theory, if we're going for good maps, I'll swap for some new maps. But first of all, we're not doing 11 maps. That would be utterly absurd. It would actually make all the games way worse, by the way. As Maui points out, all you would do is you'd just be incentivized to punish pick all day long if you're a great team. One of the best things about a 7-map pool, if you don't know, here's some history. In the prime of CS 1.6, we had a 5-map pool. At the beginning of CSGO, we had a 5-map pool. So you actually always sort of knew where someone would go, and you could prep. By the way, I thought it made a very high level of CS. The reason why I don't mind the 7-map pool is people don't actually cynically punish pick as much as you think, because you have to gamble your map pick to do so. People don't like to do that. People like to feel safe on their map pick. And if anything, they'll gamble after the vetoes for the 3rd map. That's how most people do it. So I already think we've got a very happy medium right now where, think about it, you can be a Carrigan and do a ballsy veto, or you can just play safe and people know how it is. I think that actually has made a brilliant competitive landscape. So I wouldn't change to more than 7. I wouldn't reduce it from 7. I would kick the odd one out. Vertigo would be gone tomorrow. Train would be back. And then I would say it's more like, show me an offer. Like, actually bring out a good new map, and then maybe we can talk about Inferno or Overpass or whatever you want. But it has to be a good map. I don't want this shit where Valve just forces you to play a map and you just play it all of a sudden and the other one's deleted from the game. So I think that would be whack, personally. So I don't mind the topic. I do think in general people are quite stupid how they talk about the map pool, though. I mean, by the way, even that Valve one is utterly fucking inane. That's like me saying to you, eat up, it's my new goulash. And you're like, this tastes like, like shit, though. Now, but exactly what type of shit? Is it bird shit? Is it dog shit? Or is it reindeer shit? How would I know? It's disgusting, though. No, no, no. You have to tell me exactly what you didn't like about it, or I can't make it. Anyway, more. Eat up.
I know.
Please, Mr. Valve, I'm being sick. I can't. Are you being sick? Or is that just the goulash coming back? What flavor is it? What palate? Is it irony? Give me a break, bro. It just sucks. That's all. If anything, the best thing that someone who isn't a programmer could tell you, it just really fucking sucks to play. I am the consumer. I am actually a fucking person. My aim, I am. Let me just check I've got these roles right, Valve. You make the game, and then I play the game. We have got that right. So why am I telling you how to code the fucking game? Well, is Moses meant to go, I believe you should shade the vertex shaders onto the right side of the overpass, and then I would move the box up 4.5 units because when you clip jump, Launders comes in. He's right, you know. I played KZ maps. Like, what are you? What? What sort of mad? Like, I think that's even a straw man. There's no way Moses could have said anything there that they would have ever accepted. What they basically were saying to him there was like, shut the fuck up. Like, that's, and then he was like,
yeah,
yes, sir, Mr. Gabe Newell, even though Gabe Newell has never given a fuck about Counter Strike ever. But yeah, so I think that topic's just a whatever, but it's a decent one to bring up here. So come on then, Maui, what is your bad point?
It's kind of it's what we've seen multiple times when you just make the groups or seedings too early before a tournament happens. And if I just have to point to one thing, the bad point I have here is how stacked of a group EPL Group A actually is. There are three teams that were because Cloud9 had to pull out. If Cloud9 played this, there were going to be three major playoff teams in the same group. Yep. of ESL Pro League, which is crazy because one of the teams that played in the major playoffs didn't even play the event. So of the seven possible teams that made it to the major playoffs, three of them were supposed to be in Group A. Obviously, Cloud9 didn't join this, but if you actually just look at HLTV World Rankings, you would then see even more proof that this is just so problematic and it's so stacked. And just for reference, the groups for ESL Pro League were announced in January 17th. That is 3 months prior to this happening. And I know that there is something to do with the fact that people have to schedule, but it's not that big of a difference. Like, there are two groups that are running concurrently. And so the only thing that's a difference in people's schedule and planning for the future is a single week off. It's not like it would change like a total boot camp or like change a vacation, because you're still planning to be there for week number three, because ESL Pro League reminder is only 3 weeks now. It's not 5 weeks. It's not like the difference between being in Group A and Group D is the difference in 3 weeks of your time. It's the difference in just 1 week. And you're usually planning to be there for the second week, assuming that you're going to make playoffs. And so I took the averages of all the teams just based off of HLTV World Ranking. And Group A's average rank, if I include Cloud9, is 16.5. If you take Group D, their average rank on HLTV, 37. If I take out the outlier,
and they have
which
the
is
fucking Na'Vi, the major winners there. So like, fucking
they have Na'Vi, which is the major winners, and but if I take out that outlier, which is Para, that's 111. Sure. I delete them from it. They're still 10 spots higher at 27. Their average is 27, and Group B would actually be 33. So it's like Group A is just stupid stacked. And even with Cloud9 coming in, or Saw coming in for Cloud9, it only just bumps them up by like a point. Like they're now like 18th average world ranking, as opposed to still the 33rd average group, which is B, or really the reality of what Group D is, which is that they're 37th on average in the world. So these groups are just super stacked, and you can see it in the results that are happening. I mean, we're recording this on April 25th right now, and the bottom tier games right now lower decider games for Group A are so brutal already. It's Saw and Imperial, which were both teams that were like pleasant surprises in recent months, versus Group B, which again is like one of the worst rankings overall. The bottom decider is Tyloo versus Sharks, which both those teams, they would have came in dead last in Group A, no questions asked whatsoever. And I just think the greater and bigger problem here is that you're making a tournament, which is supposed to be a flagship product for ESL, and you're making your group announcements over three months in advance of what the teams are. And it's just like, that's just too long. Too much can change in that amount of time. World ranking doesn't hold up at that point. You miss, like, those world rankings were made before Kato. They were made before the major. They were made before all these other tournaments and events. And it's just like, it can be a big problem for teams to rebook things for a single week. But like, if you're doing it this far in advance, there surely has to be a happy medium where you can make the groups a little bit more balanced, because having the average rank difference between Group A and Group D be over 20 ranking points is just way too far.
Yeah, I can't say I disagree at all. I mean, when I first saw the groups, I thought, wow, Group A is like crazy stacked, and I just left it at that. Why, you know, how it got to that point, I don't even know. But I'm not sure if ESL, do they use their own rankings for their seeding, and then they
think it's ESL world ranking. I think it's ESL, yeah. I think it's ESL world ranking at the time of the announcement.
Understood. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, it seems. I mean, it just sucks, right? That the flat out is it's horrible and egregious seeding. I've also noticed that I don't know if it's an ESL issue or a blast, but sometimes they also just the way that the teams are seeded or the first round matchups, like they'll put up like Heroic versus Astralis or something, like two teams that like historically have beef. And it's hard to know, I mean, if that's just seeding or also just, you know, they're doing it for entertainment, which both are viable reasons. And I can't really, you know, disagree with anything that you said or anything. But yeah, it's just horrible seeding. And for a flagship product, as you stated, I mean, it's just not really entertaining, at least what we're going to get through in the playoffs. You know, we're not going to see the top teams in the playoffs because one of FaZe or VP, you know, may not even make it. So yeah, overall for a product, it's just not going to be great.
What's funny is people will think like, well, no, of course, if just a normal seeding, that would be a violation of competitive integrity. It would, but I'll just tell you straight up. If you go back the last few years, there are some incredibly cynically drawn fucking Pro League groups where, like, for example, magically all the Brazilian teams just go into one group, almost like you wanted them all to fly out on the same week so they could attend other tournaments. Like, spoiler, like, that, remember, they do have that Louvre agreement with certain teams. Like, I think they've always done that, played a little bit fast and loose with Pro League. People know back in the day those stories where it's like, right, oh shit, VP's been relegated. Starting now, there's a new last chance qualifier. Shit, they lost that as well. You know what? One of the teams didn't register in time. Guess we'll just have to have another last chance qualifier. And they just keep doing that. Like at the end, it was like, okay, what do we need to do? Like to be in the league? All right, there. Can we stop doing the qualifiers now? Because VP just had to be in every fucking season because they were so bad online, if you remember, even though they were like the kings of LAN. So certainly, there might be a world where that's part of the fucking nature of these seedings. I also think, like Maui says, though, it's just incredibly stupid to do it that many months out. Not only that, with a major in between. Motherfucker, there's teams... people change rosters after the major. Like, it's the most classic, like, fucking roster mania cycle ever. So I think the reason why it's really silly to do that is because, actually, the top teams, it isn't going to matter. Like, it doesn't matter if FaZe is one or three. It doesn't really matter if G2's three or five. The real problem you're going to have is, go look at some of the teams in the groups that you think are weak. And I'll tell you right now, you have to remember where they were 4 months ago. Like, you know what? 4 months ago, I mean, I imagine someone like probably Gamer Legion had a way better ranking than you think of now. Now you don't give a fuck about them. Back then they were actually sort of not a bad little upset team, remember? They could make a run and almost make playoffs at like a Katowice. You had people like Monty when they used to have some Die Young and Bro. They used to fucking cook in those group stages, mate. They were getting loads of ranked wins over people. You had the likes of Furia, obviously, were way better and could actually do things back then. You keep going down the line. Heroic probably still had some of the rankings from when they had the last fucking lineup at that point in time. You have the teams like, Complexity. They cooked in early CS2. I've no doubt their ranking was way higher until like probably Katowice, I guess, is when it started to drop. So the problem is if you make the seeding for all these teams, the teams outside the top 10, you're just going to cook the fucking seedings. Because, I mean, some of those, like I imagine Call's probably one of the biggest drops. And what, they dropped probably like 10 spots, maybe 15 spots or something. So it's just never going to make sense for this tournament. Like, look, you get away with it because you do that three brackets thing where you can lose like three times. But even so, as Armchair IGL just pointed out, when you fuck it up, every now and then, one group's going to have like three teams that could probably make top four. And that's just going to suck because one of them, by definition, cannot play in the playoffs at that point in time, depending on the circumstances. I mean, even worse if you ever cooked it further. Like he said, if Cloud9 turned up, this would be the most unfair group ever because even the lower teams, like the Eternal Fires, were in the fucking playoffs. People like Imperial were like right on the brink of those points. So like you've basically just taken some nightmare fuel group draw from the major of all the teams that should be spread out. Meanwhile, when you go to some of those like C and D, some of those teams, you barely even fucking know the rosters. Like, what are we talking about? And also, it means that you end up with scenarios like this. This is why the seeding also makes no fucking sense. Right, someone explain to me how it is possible that, like, an obvious one to me is, like, Eternal Fire can play Astralis, but then you can also have Big against Boss. in the same tournament, opening round. Like, did I miss when Big did all these amazing things? Like, what a major. Like, what the fuck have they ever done? You know what I mean? Meanwhile, because unfortunately we aren't when they made the seeding, we all just saw Astralis. Guys, they already went 1-1 in series of their first LAN with this lineup against FaZe Clan, the number one ranked team in the world, who, by the way, for people keeping track, don't lose to many teams. Like, they lose to the best teams in the world, or they lose one occasional series elsewhere. Like, you'd never rank them whatever they were ranked. Meanwhile, I'll guarantee you, when they were at the beginning of the year with a brand new roster, yeah, I'd imagine they would probably had some absurdly low seeding, right? What would they probably be, like 40th or something insane? Because it'd just be all the players making that higgledy-piggledy puzzle piece of, like, you have points from this team with points from this team, and then you can sort of average it. I would guess they were, like, 25th or something. That would be. So the difference is, when you start the tournament, they're sure as hell not fucking 25th, are they? Like, we already know they're way better than that. So I think you did scoff this one. You fucked it up, in my opinion. Right, now we go to my bad point. And I said earlier, I only talked about Modesty individually because the bad point's obvious. And it is, by the way, I would have said this whether they'd lost to fucking Mongols or not. Bro, one of the reasons it makes me sick that we have this conversation that goes like this, because it's dog shit single factor analysis. I say I would cut Hoxie. Now, I wouldn't stop there. I would go and do a bunch of other changes. But because that's the first thing I would do, everyone goes, I wouldn't cut Hoxie. There's more problems. So then I go, all right, who else are you cutting? Well, you know, teams are complicated in the relationship. Well, fuck off then. So you're now cutting nobody, even though you acknowledge the team isn't good. Because it actually turns my stomach that the player I just described, like prime Kenny Essence-Simple, is also stuck in the prime Kenny Essence-Simple spot. He is playing with a fucking bomb roster. This roster, here's how you know his roster sucks, right? If Nico left today like he was going to Falcons, they could actually replace him at his current level and survive and be the same team. If Modesty left, the team is dead. You wouldn't even be top 10. You wouldn't ever make a playoffs. By the way, take it. You know what? Wonderful just won the major. Bring in Wonderful, give him Modesty's spot, and let's see how many playoffs he make, Hooksy. The answer will be fucking none. You'll make absolutely none. And by the way, any of those games where Hunter, Nexa, and Hooksy all shit the bed, you wouldn't even be in those games. I've seen you win those fucking maps with Monacy because I've seen him drop like a legit 28 bomb in a fucking MR12 game and win like three. I mean, you saw that stat on Reddit the other day. He'd had like 3 1v3s in like one tournament and Zewu had had one all year. Like, everyone was telling us Zewu's like the third best player in the world. Like, this guy's on such another level. I hate it when the best player in the world is trapped in a bad team. Because even though, you look, on the one hand, you're going to get to see his max level because he's going to have to be playing every fucking round and trying his absolute hardest. But it sucks because when you're at the level Monacy's at now, that performance is supposed to win you the tournament and get you the MVP, not maybe scrape into a semis where everyone just betrays you in the server. Like, I hate it that the best player in the world is just trapped in a team that it's just not good enough for him right now. It's not a good enough team for him right now.
Yeah, it's a shame, honestly. The problem is that I don't even, you know, theoretically, if you were to replace Hooksy, like, who out there could replace Hooksy, you know, reasonably, right? I mean, do you think that bringing in another IGL like Shuhei, someone who would theoretically give him more space to
operate? I did this episode recently, right, of this Feed the Trolls show where we had this discussion, right? Here's the part I don't understand about the point you and others have made. It goes like this. But Huxley's style works well with that loose style that G2 has where people frag. Only one player frags. Yeah, but who could you replace him with? Well, anyone who doesn't just only have that one style, most obvious answer ever. Like why? Surely you yourself are acknowledging his style isn't working. Like, what I don't get is this. Why are we playing a game where they won, like, Cologne 1 second ago? That was in a different game, for fuck's sake. Like, that was ages ago. Like, they've had this roster for, what, like, 6 LANs or something now? Never made a final, by the way. They had one sniff at one ever. That was it. So what I don't get about that angle is, like, essentially, by your logic, you're keeping Hooksy.
I would not keep Hooksy, but I would also make a lot of structural changes. I mean, I would probably cut Hunter, Nexa, and Hooksy and just rebuild the team around. I mean, it's already built around Modesty, but I would find a system that works with an IGL and a proven support players. And I'll get to it later in my ugly point, but I mean, just like the anatomy of a team right now, they have an amazing player who can raise the ceiling of the team, like, more so than any other player. He's the best player in the world, but their support system to get there is missing. They have no, to me, they have no structural foundation. They're unable to really even scratch the surface of the playoffs because they're not able to get there consistently. And I think that replacing Hooksy plus the Hunter and Nexa would with better players would get them there.
This is the hottest take I have right now. This team would be legitimately better if they had JT as an IGL over Hooksy. Like, this is like the way that Complexity are able to actually kind of like be an upset team, surprise people when Floppy and Grim are playing in the state that they are, and then Elise is the only person that's really firing back in most of these games, to me says that the system that Complexity are running is just better than what G2 are running. Because if Complexity had fucking Monacy instead of Halzark, holy shit, they would be so crazy, and they would basically be a comp. I would think that they would I could safely say that if Complexity with the core of Elise, JT, and Monacy instead of, and they even had Floppy and Grim still, that team is just, I actually think they're better than what G2 are, because I think Elise is in a better state than what Nico's in right now, and I think JT is calling better than what Hooksy has been calling, and that's why Complexity could even hold on in some of the games that they're in. Beyond that, I do think that there are a handful of worthy replacements. At this point, it's kind of even almost like it's like, I think a lot of people in the space are like devil's advocating for like, what would you do to instead of Hooksy? It's like almost, what would I do instead of not blowing this up? It's almost like, where would I not go for this?
Because what's the argument for sticking with it? That's what I don't get. Because by the way, Maui, the most obvious, I'll tell you what, I hadn't crystallized it before. So actually, it's a good point that you brought up here, Armchair Gel. Here's the way I'd phrase it. So what people are telling me is, but because of what I've seen Hooksy do with Nico and Monacy, how could you replace him with anyone else? Well, yes, they don't have Hooksy and Monacy. So what you're telling me is an IGL on a worse team must outperform without Nico and Monacy in order to get his crack at Nico and Monacy, because my take's been the same forever. The only reason this guy ever won tournaments, by the way, he never even used to make finals aside from that, it was only those tournaments they won, is because I think he had the most crazy fragging almost ever in CSGO. Like, the team look at 2019, got to be up there. There's some very, very skilled squads. That was one of the most stacked fragging teams I've ever seen. So I don't know, like, if people are like, I'm not sure if like Shuhei, mate, sure, he's never had these players. That's what I don't get. Like, you can't say, like, what he does with Torji and fucking, I mean, Yimpa, I guess, at this point in time. What, that's supposed to compare to Monacy? We've all just agreed Monacy's the best player in the world. No, I know what you mean, Maui. That's the weird angle. They're sort of like shadow boxing, but in this scenario, we haven't got equal circumstances, have we? So how can we know what they'd be like with all... Like, can you say, what's the argument to keep the team? I've never heard that argument, ever.
Right. And I think that, like... One thing that was impressive in Hooksy's resume for me before was when because I even wrote on that as a guest feature on that HLTV article about why I thought Hooksy and JKS would work, is that I thought the loose style would be beneficial to the star players like Hunter, Nico, and Monacy, because I thought that he would enable them, because I remember watching Copenhagen Flames and a lot of people had autonomy on that team. Yabby had a lot of autonomy. Roy had a lot of autonomy. Xyphon got to do what he wanted. And I kind of was like, well, that's kind of what I wanted at the time, because you had a hands-off in-game leader that was just like able to, with sort of pieces that could work on their own, just then kind of then build the greater picture and then just play a selfless style. And but then now we're seeing the limitations of that, which is that, well, now there's really only two guys that he's working with, as opposed to him having so many more. And I've kind of had to fall on that sword where it's like, yeah, that the loose style works when you have really good players. And even thinking about the Copenhagen Flames lineup that Hooksy got to a quarterfinals of a major, think of where all of those players went and how they actually were all performing very well for quite some time. Yabby was the standout player for Heroic last year. Nikodaz is, for whatever reason, one of the best hybrids now. Like, as a rifler, he's like stupid good. He's like unnecessarily good, actually. With the op, he's questionable. With Roy, he was like the best player for some time when he was playing for Fnatic as like their aggressive rifler there after that Copenhagen Flames lineup dissolved. And then, I mean, Xyphon's just been one of those guys where it's like, he's actually really talented, but I feel like personality issues have been the only thing that have held him back. And somehow he was able to work on that Copenhagen Flames lineup. But yeah, I just think that, like, it's not, in a weird way, it's like the like, argument to try to say, like, Hooksy's doing the job. I mean, I get some of us have come really down really hard on Hooksy, like me, Kassad, and Thorin, and Richard come down really hard on Hooksy.
By the way, I was like pretty high on Hooksy, but I've actually turned, like, I really have changed a lot in the last like 4 months, my opinion on him, because of some of the ways that they failed. Well, actually, I would even say like 6 months. It was like in December is where I really started to change my tune to Hooksy, because watching them losing to a underpowered at the time Na'Vi lineup consecutively made me think, okay, this system is just not working anymore. They're getting beat by basically better strategic systems because the Stars can't outperform the fact that they don't have the support network necessary like a team like Na'Vi has had that has elevated their people to above the sum of their parts.
By the way, just to quickly jump in, one thing I will say is this. People make it like I'm being super unfair to Hooksy, right? G2's supposed to potentially be the best team in the world. They have the best player in the world, and he is going to, by the time he gets kicked, have been there for 2 fucking years. Like, do people not understand? You only get 2 years as an IGL if you're, like, a goat. Like, even, remember how Alexi B got 6 months? He made a Cat All final, bombed a pro league, had like, what, like a fucking, didn't make the playoffs of the major, then had like a fourth at Blast, and then had like bombed fucking Cologne. That was enough to get him fired, right? Hooksy won in CSGO, guys. It's CS2 now, we've had loads of events, and he hasn't made one final. Like, we're talking like he's still on that, like, what about Cat All Cologne? And I'll just read this out. When I read this out to you, I'll probably do a video on this, right? When I read this out, case closed after this. Here are the 3 tournaments Hooksy won. Here are the ratings of his players at these 3 tournaments. The first tournament was Blast World Finals at the end of 2022. Monacy had a 1.24 rating. Nico had a 1.16 rating. Hunter had a 1.15 rating. JKS had a 1.12 rating. His fourth best player had a 1.12 rating. Right? How is Hooksy making them frag? And by the way, do you want another biggest meme of all? That's the light event. Get ready. Then we go to Katowice. Remember that? They won that last year. Right. JKS, that was the guy who was fourth on the other tournament they won. Keep track. He had a 1.24 rating. Your fourth best player can have a 1.24 rating in a massive LAN you win. Hunter had a 1.21 rating. Nico had a 1.17 rating. And Monacy just chilled on a little 1.14. No biggie. Then you have Cologne, the last event they won. Right. Nico had a 1.35 rating. Monacy had a 1.34 rating. Hunter had a 1.21 rating. And JKS shit the bed with a 1.09 rating as the fourth. Right, who the fuck of any player I'm going to replace him with has that? You are aware Carrigan doesn't have that. Apex doesn't have that. Like, they're obvious ones, they just wouldn't join. Take anyone else. I don't know if Shuey is ready. Hooksy wasn't ready before this, motherfucker. What even is that argument? Like, the point is Shuey a better IGL? If you believe he is, let him have a go with some of these pieces, you know what I mean? Now, you can certainly argue those pieces don't exist anymore, but that's also why I don't think it makes sense of Hooksy. He only won when he had people like Maui. You watch a million events and stats. Those are fucking bonkers numbers for your fourth, like, outfield players, as it were. Those are fucking crazy numbers, mate.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really, it took me a second to come around to the fact that it really was, like, I wanted to believe, because I mean, I was watching pretty closely. I was like, okay, what are they doing well? Okay, they have some cool reactions on a couple maps, and then their T-sides on a couple maps, like Inferno, felt like they were pioneering something, but Kassad was right when I was saying, like, oh, they've mastered and they've cornered Inferno, and they've kind of done a meta-defining thing, which is that it really is start every round for the first 35 seconds, Nico go kill. Okay, now we just exec into B. Because if Nico can't just go kill on Banana, well, the plan falls apart very quickly. And it's like, on all teams, like, star players have to frag, but it's like, it is the level and consistency across those 4 players, which other IGLs don't have in terms of resources, that or did have in terms of resources. Like, even when, you're right, even when FaZe are on their streak, or even when Mao's are making like a pro league run or whatever, it's not, you, it's like 3 people usually have really good runs, but it's very, very rarely like you have 4 at that level. And so when he doesn't have that level, it's, I will say, like, the floor isn't like the one thing with Hooksy is, like, the floor of this team isn't actually that bad, but I actually just don't credit Hooksy with that. I actually, this is where that floor raiser versus ceiling raiser discussion comes about. And it's like, Monacy is right now the best floor raiser in the world for me too. Like, he's literally dragging this team it through games that everybody else is falling apart on. And yeah, he's a ceiling raiser too. We don't need to get into the semantics about it, but it's just like the reason that they're getting into these deep runs into tournaments is because Monacy is just kicking and screaming, dragging Hooksy, Nexa, and Hunter.
By the way, you do also notice everyone tries to like group us all in the same group. Like, first of all, Maui actually advocated for Huxley. Then when Huxley joined, I even did point out Monacy's level went up, so I'll give him a try. I already bailed on Huxley once they stopped fucking winning. People acted like I was saying he should be fired the whole time. I was fine when he was winning kind of 8-0. I could accept that. I could say, okay, questionable veto at the major, but even so, you have to give him more time. He just won kind of 8-0, he won blast. Like, I was fine. When it gets to CS, this is why I'm so sick of this take, Maui. Every fucking caster telling me, stop referencing CSGO, it's a different game. Same motherfuckers. What about when Huxley wouldn't make that point? That means somebody's talking about Narnia, you can't like. It's not even in CS2, was it? I've just said that before. No one's ever been able to rebut this point. You have the best player in the world, you haven't made one final. You've been at all the lands, not one final. What do you want? Like, eventually, by the way, you just have to be fired, whether you're the right IGL or not, whether someone can. Eventually, you have to win. You have to be fired eventually. So, there we go. Are we moving on? Are you ready for your ugly point now?
Sure. And it kind of ties into that. I mean, I'm not a Huxley fan. I would definitely advocating for him to be fired. I don't understand who could replace him, and I haven't thought about it. But
it's all good.
Anyways, on to my next one. So my ugly point is Cloud9 is losing Perfecto, and they're keeping a core basically around Axile and Boomich. But they're losing Perfecto, but they're keeping Groove. So it's like kind of like a two-parter. So my first thought is that if they kept Perfecto, and this is just the way that I'm kind of modeling Counter-Strike and how I would build a team myself, they would have an excellent platform to build a team off of. They would have Perfecto, who I think is one of the best team play-oriented anchors in the world. They would have Boomich, who I rate as a good IGL. I think he's fairly skilled. He gets some crazy shots once in a while. Does some good stuff. And then Axile, who has been finding his old form, and for me is in a rare breed of anchors where he's kind of like that overqualified anchor who has really sick aim, can do well with low resources, just kind of with his aim bailing him out. And so by having those three, you would just, and I'm just saying just, but it's actually a big task, but you would only need a superstar level opera, which hopefully the your salary for Electronic and your whatever you got for the transfer fee would kind of take care of. And then a young, cracked out, space-taking rifle player. So I really thought that losing Perfecto is just going to hurt Cloud9. And then Groove sticking around, who I'm not exactly sure what Cloud9 has seen in Groove. I think there's an old quote from Jack back in the day where he says that, you know, Groove is like a genius, but... you know, this point's been beaten to death, but basically, you know, Cloud9 back when Nafni was at the helm, you know, going off of basically individual plays, flashing and peaking. I'm not sure that brand of Counter-Strike is, I'm not sure, but it's just not going to work in today's era of Counter-Strike. And so Groove has had like poor results ever since they picked up the Navi duo, who they were expected to do well with. I mean, you're picking up Electronic and Perfecto, and they're joining Shiro, Axile, and Hobbit. I mean, that on paper was a team that was destined to win, and he pretty much achieved nothing with it. So, yeah, just ugly for me that they're losing one of the best anchors in the world, and they're keeping a coach that has done fuck all. So,
the.
Maui's a known Groove hater, by the way. He's asked for him to be fired before, so come on.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Groove. I'm not a fan of the style that he worked with Nafni on that led to me directing all of my hatred towards Nafni, but retroactively, I would have wanted to call out both Groove and Nafni through most of that. And for them to be losing Perfecto is just wild to me. Like, people like Perfecto do not grow on trees in the same way, actually, that people, like, it feels weird to say that you could find an Electronic easier than a Perfecto, but that's actually generally how I do view the landscape. Like, people like Yekindar have those incredibly high highs for brief periods, and they can catch fire because, man, you just go through FPL and you find the one rifler that's just sprinting at everybody and winning every aim duel, and you can sign him, but to find the guy that can play a mid-late round, can use the key piece of utility necessary to slow down
a T attack most effectively, that's perfecto. That stuff is the stuff that's gained through experience and years of demo watching more than it is just getting a guy that can run at people and then take space, shoot a couple heads, and then he dies and you don't have to worry about him for the rest of the round. It's almost like, do I think it's going to be easier to find somebody that's like Boros, or do I think it's easier to find somebody that's like Majisk? The answer is actually very obvious. Boros type players pop up all the time and they have very short-lived careers, but people like Majisk have made they basically made their claim and stake on just the fact that they can play and outlast everybody, because it is based off of fundamentals. It is based off of when you're an anchor, of reading timings, of knowing when you actually should aggress versus no, I should tuck into my bomb site because I'm not sure if the communication is clear enough. All of that stuff is so much more difficult. And so the way that Cloud9 are deciding to rebuild themselves, I have to agree that I feel like it's a bit flawed. Like, Axile had one good event, really. He really just had that one major. And I would have been more willing to just stick with Boomich and Perfecto than Boomich and Axile. I know that Axile's ceiling seems to be a bit higher right now, but Perfecto was playing some really good Counter-Strike. Even if the numbers don't necessarily show it, he was doing all those little things that once again made like his stats a little bit less flashy, but still glued the team together in such a way that was very necessary to have a functioning roster. So for me right now, I just think this is just like almost, this is almost like with the remaining five players that were on this team with Hobbit and Perfecto being benched, you could have just grabbed three names at random. And I almost feel like including Groove in that, and it would have been a better assembly than having Axile, Boomich, and Groove. I would have kept Boomich no matter what, but I definitely would have kept Perfecto. And even if for whatever reason I had to kick two other players, I would have then been torn. I would have probably just kept Axile and Hobbit over Groove. Like, that, it's just as simple as that. Because then all you're looking for really then is like you're really looking for an opera who can fit that. And maybe you try to transfer somebody to be a little bit more of an aggressive life rifler or convert them to that. But nah, this just really ain't it for me for Cloud9.
Right, I'll give some angles on the Cloud9 org that people won't be aware of, but I am, because I both know the history and I literally know the owner of Cloud9 and have for many years. So I've even talked to him about moves. I even talked to him about picking this team up when I saw it was available. I told him, you should definitely go for this team. Like, it's probably the one where, because of the whole like war situation where you're going to get a cheaper deal because only a couple of people can bid, it's probably the best bang for buck you get. Like, no one could know they'd sort of choke. Like, people will forget this. Minimum at Rio, they were supposed to have a semi-final, if not make the final, win the fucking major. Like, everything was possible for that team. They just never made good on it. So what I will say is this: the reason why I think they have still stuck with Groove is there's two factors here. So one is that people won't know this. Like, first of all, he was a pro player himself. He actually used to play for Virtus Pro when they first existed in the early 2000s, but he was sort of like one of the background players. Then in early League of Legends, the game that Jack from Cloud9 literally came up in, he built a team called Moscow 5, later Gambit Gaming, which was like one of the best lineups of all time. Because what was amazing about it wasn't the best five players by any stretch. It was just one of those like magical chemistry lineups. And supposedly, because there was a time where one of their players either went to like an American team, supposedly Groove even used to tell them, no matter what arguments you're having, do not break this five-man lineup up. Like, it's not actually you individually that are winning these games. It's like a special chemistry you have, or how you balance each other out. So he obviously knew something a bit more shrewd about the game. And the premise went, because old Russian Counter-Strike used to be like it is now, you just cycle players all the time based on whether you want to play with him or whether you had a bad LAN. Groove's whole take was like, no, you want to build like a system. You want to build out chemistry. You want to like build a basis that you can then refer back to. So then when you come to CSGO and that Gambit team online came out of nowhere, and by the way, they were the number one team of the world. I mean, even when Na'Vi used to beat them early on, they used to win if like Simple just went like fucking 1.4 rating or something. Like, that doesn't even count. Gambit was an amazing team. And the story went that Groove was the one calling because it was the online era. And I tell you what, if that's true, he looked fucking dope. And spoiler, that's one of the reasons why we were really quick to point out this Nafani guy is not the same guy on LAN. Like, it just doesn't look like he was calling. Like, it can't just be nerves. Like, he's just not making the same calls. He didn't play the same style. Like, the rotations they used to make online looked like they had wallhacks, guys. It was mental. But I tell you what, they were so good, no one ever accused them of wallhacks. You notice that? Even in the era when all those fuckers, like, that shitter team was using cheats at the fucking CS, and no one ever accused Gambit. We just thought they were fucking sick. So I think, unfortunately, all of this, if you don't know Jack from Cloud9, he trusts scorches a long time. He had Reaper'd in League of Legends for years and years and years, even though they hadn't won the title for ages. And he had recently a guy called Mythy, also for years. He had him for like something like 10 splits or something insane like that in the LCS. So like we're talking like 4 or 5 years almost at this point in time. So he is very loyal. But then here's the other deal. So one, that's why I think essentially he believes in Groove. Like my take is this. If I had to guess what they're going to do in Cloud9, if you're actually getting rid of all the players, you announce it. You put them all on the transfer market. You do a fire sale. You sell them all off. Or you do something like you bench one player and you bring the next guy in tomorrow. The way that they've done this move, where they've benched some of them, but apparently they are selling Perfecto. They've already sold Electronic. And last year they were willing to sell Shiro. That implies to me that that's just good business. Like they've probably made, if you think about it, collectively, they've made millions and millions off this. So here's what I think the reason why they aren't firing Groove. I think what they think now is, look, it's not like you have 3 million to spend and you can go buy Monacy necessarily, although who knows, right? That was hinted at on some of the stream shit with the Anker guy. But imagining you're not going to get Monacy, which would obviously be the instant like floor raises type scenario where you'd have a team again. I think the logic they're using, whether it's fallacious or not, I can't know, I'm not in the Russian scene, is with that type of money, Groove can just go and pick the next Russians. And what we'll do is we'll keep Boomich in exile and we'll bring in 3 other Russian players. Now, they might be people we know, they might be people we don't know. I'll tell you what, if there's one scene in the world right now that could actually say we could fucking reach out into a crowd like my joke at the beginning and pull a guy from a LAN center and he could actually be like a top 20 player, it's fucking Russian Counter-Strike right now. Like, everyone's seen the last few years. I mean, the joke of VP is, I think eventually the real problem VP is going to have is someone like Fame's just going to get kicked because there's just not a fucking star player anymore. It's like, what, are you even in the team at this point in time? Like, you can't really just have 4 fraggers and fucking Jame. So I think there will be players, but I think you're gambling on a rebuild now and like scouting eye. Now, if that's shit, yeah, get rid of him tomorrow. But I think that's the angle. And then lastly, I'll say this. You might think, this is why you can't do the analysis that Maui just did, which is totally fine as an outsider, which is, it's not that anyone in Cloud9 sitting down going, sell Electronic. Perfecto, nah, I'm not feeling Perfecto, keep Exile. No one's doing that. Here's what I would also tell you. In the same way as Jack is incredibly loyal to coaches and players who've been there a long time, he is probably the most accommodating owner ever at letting stars leave his team, by the way. He's done this many times. Now, true, he'll pair it with what I just said earlier. He'll do amazing business. Like, he'll get like 500,000 extra for that start. And, you know, he'll like do all the business he got. But if you say to him straight up, I don't want to be in this team anymore, or my dream is to play with this guy on this team, he'll make it happen if it can. Man, this isn't League of Legends where you're in the middle of a split. Like, if the deal's there, the deal's there. There's no poaching rules. Also, because there's no poaching rules, guys. By the time the player comes to you in CS, he's already mentally in that team. He's already agreed, like, I want to join your team. You want me to join your team? Wouldn't it be great? Awesome. Yeah. Right, now let's go talk to the dogs. At that point in time, like, you're just risking petulance, unfortunately, if you keep them in. I mean, remember, I'll just point this out as a quick, and the second I say this, you'll all instantly realise what I mean. Bro, this guy let fucking Stu2k leave after he won the major and had just signed a massive extension. Go look that up. No one mentions the extension, do they? This motherfucker, you never let a player go like that. You literally say to him, one, motherfucker, I just paid you. I just gave you your max contract. And two, we just won the major, dickhead. Rebuild the squad. Instead, he was willing to let that guy leave. And everyone remembers, we hadn't seen Cloud9 CS be relevant until this fucking Russian team. They had years in the wilderness of just stupid international lineups and trying again and again and again. So I just think it's a rare example of an owner who is like maybe too loyal and in some ways is too accommodating to let people leave. Because look, I would never let either of these players leave. I'd tell Electronic, guess what? Tough shit, dickhead. You only signed last year. Do you see that end date on your contract? That's the day you'll be leaving. Back to work now. I would never be going, oh yeah, let me just help you get into a way better team and then I'll just have to like withdraw from fucking Pro League and get shit on by every fan in the whole fucking scene. And remember, the worst part in Cloud9 is because you're not NA team anymore, you don't even have that fallback of like, oh well, it's an NA team like Cole. The only reason a fan cares about you if they're a Cloud9 fan is you should actually be one of the best teams in the world. And you cock-teased everyone for the last year without quite the right, you've always been one piece away and now you've only got like two pieces completely. So I agree, it's massively ambitious. Like whatever they're doing now, if they're not just going to leave the Russian scene, they're going to have to make some probably huge gambles. Or let's just say, I'll put a 10% chance in. Maybe there is a world that Monacy signing happens. I'll tell you what, if that happens, all fucking bets are off. Then who the fuck knows what's going on at that point in time? Because I don't even get why that was even hinted at in the first place. I mean, it was implied that Monacy himself was into the move. So kind of an interesting one. And by the way, that even though the G2 said he's not for sale, everyone's for sale. That's just literally how fucking esports works. Like, we don't have any teams, ironically, except the Falcons. That's like Cloud9, And G2 aren't owned by sheiks in the fucking Middle East. They don't have unlimited money. If you go to them and go, here is $4 million, they're selling you Monacy instantly. Like, it's not even a question. And also, here's the other part they haven't thought about. You might think it's the case that, like, they never let Monacy go. They just were about to let Nico go in exchange for this compensation. Surely you never let Nico. By the way, he was still really good at the time. Is everyone forgetting that? He was fucking, that was when he was like, people were arguing he should be second, he should be number one player of the year that year over fucking Zemu. That was a real conversation. So they can say, I've always taken, we're not, like, Monty's not available as like, add a million to whatever you were thinking. That's what I've always taken that statement as. So I can't tell which way it's going. I can't tell if they're going to go budget and gamble, if they're going to try a massive move for Monty and then hope that attracts other people. I don't know, but I will say it's an interesting scenario because, like I say, if you know a little bit about the org, it's not really like the other orgs. It's kind of a bit weird in that. It's a bit more old school. It is one guy who makes a lot of the decisions, I've got to say. All right. Right, move on then. Maui, what is your bad, ugly point?
Yeah, the fact that Furia, despite the fact that I think many of us were pleased, I don't think we actually talked about that on this show too much. Like, maybe we did a little bit.
It didn't happen. It wasn't that long ago. It was only a few days ago, this move, mate.
Yeah, so we didn't really talk about the fact that Art has departed Furia too much, which I think is a cool thing. Like, I think that's good. I think that's going to move them forward into the future of how you should be playing sensible Counter-Strike. But what I don't like, and what is ugly about this whole thing, is the fact that their replacement is Kai, who I have publicly stated and still stand by this, that of all Tier 1 teams right now, he's just flat out the worst player. Like, it didn't take me long to see that. Like, what's interesting is that actually the stats are maybe even okay, but God, the eye test is just terrible on this guy. Like, Kai, I think, jiggle peaks less than any other rifler I have ever watched in a demo in CS2, period. In a world that is, like, basically everybody's looking at Donk demos and seeing to themselves, oh, look at the way he kind of, like, jiggles out, but then he kind of, like, counter-strafes back in, kind of slides back to, like, make the fight really hard on his opponent. I just watch Kai walk strafe into angles that are held by ops and rifles, and he just gets beamed in the face by literally everybody with a pulse holding the mouse against him. And so Kai, not only was it like an easy claim to make that he was the worst player, and I had only really watched his demos on his old Fury Academy team. As soon as he plays, I tweet that out, and the other Fury Academy players come at me, like ZMB, who I think is the IGL of that team. He's like, oh, you haven't talked to Kai, so you can't judge his play, which is obviously an absurd thing to say.
Secret Valve dev.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I have to speak and do a full length interview with Kai, who maybe can't even speak English for all I know. It's that also, it's like, no, I've watched him play on Fury Academy up against much worse opposition than he's going to be facing at this Get event, and he was getting absolutely body bagged by them. So Kai plays that Get event all the way through. After I make that claim, he's the lowest rated player of the entire event, and boo hoo, who would have thunk it? Anybody that watched any Kai, like, it's almost like, because so many Brazilians and people came at me, was like, oh, like, you got to give Kai a chance, you know, he's just joining the team, or like, oh, isn't it just a temporary thing? Well, apparently it's not just a temporary thing. Apparently they're going to play all of ESL Pro League with him, and this is just, it's just like, it's almost like I'm getting crucified sometimes for being the only buddy who gives a single fuck to watch a demo of an academy level player and then give an opinion about it, because they're like, no, you have to respect him and talk to him and give him a full length interview. You got to bring him on the Snake and Banter first before you actually judge his in-game play. It's like, what are we talking about here? This guy is horrible. He's incredibly bad. I don't always, in this way, like, I don't put the entire blame on Kai. Like, I'm not, like, Kai's horrible as a player, but Aisha has no business being in Furia. Like, I literally think Art is a much better player than Kai. It's just that as an in-game leader, he was detrimental to the future of Caserato, Yuri, even Fallen. He's even detrimental to Fallen's success. I think Fallen is a more successful player, plays a more winning brand of Counter-Strike than Art does. And so I would have wanted Art off the team, but God, if it has to be Kai, it's again, like, one of these, like how many of these do we get in esports where it's like a cursed monkey paw situation? It's like, yes, you can finally get rid of Art, but then you're going to take this up and coming Brazilian player. Okay, we do it. Oh, how long does it take for this player to become up and coming? 5 years. It's like, this guy is nowhere even remotely close to playing Tier 1 level Counter-Strike right now. I might eat my words. Maybe he has one good map or something like that at ESL Pro League, but this guy, he's not fit for it, and he was terrible at the Get Brazil Rio de Janeiro event. He's going to be terrible in Pro League too.
As a meta point to, like, replacing a player, one of the things that I hate the most about you know, replacing a player with like an academy level player is putting them in the positions that the former player was in. So like Art was naturally playing like rotator positions, kind of high, playing positions where he's going to get duels, and putting a player who is basically at the academy level into those kinds of positions is just setting them up for failure. So this looks bad for Fury as an organization, which makes it even uglier is the fact that they had legit academy talent like Cowez, who is now playing for Payne, like was sitting on the Fury Academy roster and then now is succeeding on a better team with Payne Gaming. So that makes that ugly. And that just as a meta point overall, that's happened too on like Ninja's like NIP Academy, right? Where they had Nilo, who is now playing on Metasport. But just setting, I'm not really, you know, obviously Kai isn't a great player and he's just going to be a placeholder for I don't know who, but someone else is probably going to come in. And it sucks that organizations are putting players in where they're just going to be set up for failure. I don't really see a way in which Kai is just going to turn it around and be really good at playing rifle, you know, a rifle on Inferno or a rotate on Vertigo. There's just no time for him to adapt to those positions and be successful at those roles to begin with.
The thing that's so criminal to me is, it's like you say at the end there, you haven't even picked someone from the pro scene. So before I can even figure out, is this guy actually a competent IGL, I have to watch him get acclimatized to play in LANs, to play in the best teams in the world, to run in practice, to going to events. Like, the fucking ramp-up time is ludicrous. And this team has no ramp-up time. They're in the G2 category where, like, people want them to win now. If we're going to keep Cesarato, who is in his own, like, rifle version of a Monacy fucking prison, then people want them to bring a player in that today wins. Well, here's the problem with that. There are players you could do that with. I'll give you some obvious IGLs, right? Obviously, Bigger Zera's earned his fucking spot. I mean, he can even fucking frag, for God's sake. Then how about, I mean, Vinny, I think just what he's already shown with Imperial probably deserves a crack. Played with all these players as well, by the way. Here's the one that I don't get. Isn't Fallen right there? You bought him for $700,000. Everyone's telling me he's not the overrated player I say he is, but he's not that good an AWPer, and now he doesn't even IGL. Like, bro, if he doesn't even give you 6 months of IGLing, what the fuck even is this? What even was that deal? Like, is that just like a bad faith signing or something? Like, did he just lie to you that he can IGL? Or is it worse? Did people like Gary watch his game and Art and just go, actually, don't think it's 2018, mate. I think we'll be IGLing again. Is that what happened? Because whatever happened, now I want to know why Fallen's there. What, he's just there to be like an average or subpar AWPer, like brilliant. So already you've got problems in the team. Go on.
I have to assume they're pivoting to Fallen in game leading.
Well, should be the obvious one, right?
I have to assume that. I think like if I pump the brakes on the take at all, it's like it's one of those things where it's like, surely Kai is just like they're waiting to find somebody. But the thing I want to bring up again is that like in like Art's big monologue about all these problems with Furia, one of the things he cited was that they took too long to pull the trigger on these big players or these up-and-comers that were around. Like, Payne, for example, just signed Snow from Case, and I, by virtue of watching actually a demo for Kai, I saw Snow just dumpster Furia Academy. And so, like, I just feel like Furia might be doing the same thing to themselves where they just keep shooting themselves in the foot repeatedly, where they're kind of in between ideas and they're just thinking to themselves, the buyout's a lot. Yes, the Brazilian buyouts are notoriously terrible. And it makes sense that you might have made mistakes before with being too gun-shy of pulling the trigger on just, like, a young up-and-coming talent who would have elevated your team or a young up-and-coming in-game leader like Big Uzera, and now you're paying the price way too late because you're losing some of the prime of Yuri. Like, Yuri has gotten worse. Yuri is definitely not the player that he was 3 years ago. Cesarato is still a monster in my eyes. Maybe he's not top 10 in the world, but to me he's still top 20 in the world. But if they're just going to keep waiting, kind of looking around, surveying the area, well, this is exactly what Art's talking about. And if Art, you know, God, he was a terrible in-game leader for this team, but he did reveal some stuff, which I really respect the balls on him to do that. Like, he burned that bridge pretty brightly against Furia because he said, like, man, this management is just really bad. They're not letting...
I'm going to do some of this in my next point, by the way. Go on.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty much it on that one.
Okay. I mean, on that one, I'll just say, like, at this point in time, like, it isn't just the Kai guy. Like, Fallen will have to actually prove he can IGL. And by the way, if he isn't, then why would we keep him in the team? Like, you've signed Bigazeer and get another AWPer. So that one's just a fucking bomb to me. I don't know what the point in it is. And the reason why it's so underwhelming is it has to be a big name if it's Furia. Like, they don't even play the SKM IPR role and sit at the top of the scene and take the best players. Like, the only good players they have came up in their team. That's how stupid this fucking system is. Or they're washed like Fallen. So, right, my ugly point is the art tell-all. And notice I didn't put bad. I didn't put good. I put ugly. Because one, this is actually one thing I'm pretty sick and tired of about Brazilian pro players. Are you ready? So when you're all in your team, it's kind of like listening to a Gaules stream. Suddenly you're all a tribe and we don't understand you. And you're just a family and we're just plebs from Europe who are colonizers who don't understand what it's like to be with a family and to fight with them every day. But magically, when you all leave or want to leave, because people forget Cold Zero did this. When Cold Zero was on the transfer list and benched, he intentionally did an interview like this where he burned the fuck out of all the people and all the org and said disrespectful things because he thought he'd force his way out. Right, Art, bro, this was your team. I'm supposed to believe 5 seconds before you were kicked, these are your best friends, greatest org, Akari's a genius of Brazilian Counter-Strike. Suddenly, every story, bro, this is like that thing, a little red flag for you guys. If you ever meet a girl where all of her ex-girl boyfriends were psycho-toxic abusers, spoiler, what are the odds? That sounds like she frames every ex-boyfriend as a psycho-toxic abuser. When she's not with them anymore. I'm sure they weren't like that when she got with them. Well, my problem with this one is this. It's like, Art, mate, where was any of this? Where was there even a hint and a wink and a nudge about any of this with the org? Remember, you could say all the players are good. We'd all ride with you if you hinted that like things were going on. You never even leaked a single thing to a journalist, mate. Meanwhile, apparently, from what you've listened, this is why I say it's ugly, his tell-all is fucking mental. Like, I'm not disputing whether it's true or not, but why was this kept secret? Like, am I missing something? I believe in keeping things in the locker room, right? But I mean things like, who made that call at the end of the round? Like, did you have a fight over, like, what we should do on this, like, 1v2? And, you know, that's the sort of stuff you keep in the locker room. You don't keep, like, I was forced into veganism. I wasn't allowed to see my girlfriend and I had to stay in the... They kicked Henny. By the way, that one alone was like a nuke. When I heard that one, like, I needed to be strapped down, motherfucker. Because as far as I can tell, the second I heard that piece of information, they chose to kick Henny. And it wasn't even true. And by the way, it sounds like even distributed the rumor, the old classic that he just wanted to play with his brother and isn't competitive. Meanwhile, what he really wanted to do was, since they lived in Miami during COVID, he actually wanted to go out to a nightclub every now and then and not just play a million games of online CS with zero lands. I don't blame him. That's the one time that might have been appropriate behavior. Not least because, if you remember the time, and I do, he was fucking cooking, you imbecile. He was actually the best Henny you'd ever seen. His style worked like fuck in that team. And everyone remembers, if that team had gone to LAN, that would have been the best Furia you had ever seen. That team could really have, like, made a deep run at a major. Like, it could have done some big time shit. So the idea you ruined that, like, bro, the actual main message I took away from that is, you know what? Forget Art. Forget Fallen. These aren't even my biggest fucking, like, suspects. The Akari guy is fucking inting the entire Brazilian team. This is mental. Like, I don't even understand that one as well, by the way. Like, what possible reason would there be that your coach can tell you what food you can eat? Remember, I'm not saying, like, stop eating kebabs all that. That would be vaguely reasonable. The idea he can tell you can't eat meat anymore, like, give me a fucking break. Like, that's one where you have to actually be Astralis and win the major to do that. If you do that, I'll maybe go, well, who can say? You can't then just be coming fucking last place in tournaments, getting banged out by ye old Mongols when they weren't even called Mongols, when they were IHC or whatever the fuck. Like, that tell-all was just one of the ugliest scenes I've ever seen in Counter-Strike, because people don't realise he didn't just drop one bomb. He set off the entire fucking Atreides nukes, didn't he? Like, all of them at once and destroyed everything. Like at this point, how does that, unless they do a counter tell all and tell some great stories about Art, they just basically destroyed their credibility, maybe forever. Like, I don't think the Akari guy can come back from this, mate. How can he? Especially, like the last point, he's signing nobodies from his academy squad. Like, this is going to be bad. And I think everyone's going to be against him now. Everyone is.
Yeah, this resembles the NIP calc meltdown of last year. Just because the narrative of Furia pretty much since its inception was, we're all friends, we're all, you know, we all played together younger when we were younger, and we're all coming up in the scene together. I mean, let's not forget, they all signed like what, 7 year contracts?
It was five.
When the whole thing, 5 year contracts. Yeah. I mean, but I mean, you know, in Counter-Strike, a five year contract is that just doesn't happen. And, you know, that the entire, as you said, Art basically just dropped a nuke on the entire narrative that we've,
by the way, those 5 year contracts only run out this year. When I just googled, they run out in June this year. That's how long those contracts were. They're only just gonna run out now.
That's insane. And so I mean, what is gonna end up happening, at least it's gonna be you know, as the team disassembles, you know, into the future, this isn't gonna happen, you know, anytime soon, I don't think, because people are probably going to keep it under wraps. But we're gonna hear stories like of, you know, when Config on your podcast, you know, or Hamp is coming on your podcast, we're going to get little snippets, and it's not going to be pretty. It's going to be pretty damning stuff. And it's just a shame that, it had to come out in this way. But as an org and as a brand, Furia is toast in my mind.
The Henny kick pissed me off a lot, because if you've got a guy that's, say, it's like Michael Jordan is obviously like a crazy comparison to make, but if you have a guy that's turning your team into a pretty much dominating the North American competition that it was in that COVID era, and he was a top 20 player of that year by HLTV's metrics, then I like, you let him do what he wants to do in that sense. Like, you can look from afar and see a top tier player, and you can say to yourself, I might have done this a little bit differently. Maybe I wouldn't have indulged so much in like whatever Henny was doing, like, I don't know, going out in Miami or whatever, partying, drinking, staying up late. Maybe I wouldn't do that myself. But if we're winning, well, that's kind of what part of being a team is. You deal with some of these problems. You don't. And also, the thing is about Henny is that this was known about his character. Like, that's actually kind of one of the reasons where Henny to me is like a player that I've liked a lot of the time, because it was like, yeah, he kind of was a bad boy for a long time, but he still would hit the nasty op shots, win the crazy clutches, and overall just be a solid player for a lot of teams in that late 2010s, early 2020 time, when it was just like, this is what he's good at, and you have to know that you're signing up for it. It's also like, if you want to make another like woman reference or whatever here, it's like knowing that somebody is like crazy, always going out, always partying, and then you're like saying, I loved all these things about you, but you're gonna have to change them for me. It's like, what are you talking about? Like, you take the good with the bad. If they're a fun loving person but they like to go out all the time, you're not gonna just clip their wings and say, nope, you can't do that with me anymore, you got to do all the good, none of the bad. It's like, you're trying to trim the fat on certain undesirable qualities there, but to try to change the entire person that was Henny then is just never going to happen. And also, look at the spiral and the free fall that they found themselves in as soon as they decided to do that. Like, this Furia org, man, it's just so despicable the way that they wanted to change everything about it, whether that was like Gary or higher up management. It seemed like it was Gary that really wanted to change everything with players. Like, I don't understand where that kind of stuff comes from at all. And it just seems so, I don't know if it's just illogical or just far-fetched, or like what even makes him want to do that, when it's like, there aren't even really examples. Like, there's a difference in taking something that's an example of like, okay, I see certain people in this space are trying to implement like practice 6 days a week. Wow, that's like a huge difference from 5 days a week. That seems like a small change versus like, nope, we're all going vegan. We're all practicing for 80 hours every week. It's like, but nobody's doing that. Not even the top teams are doing that. Nope, we're going to be trailblazers and do something completely different that nobody's ever tried before. We can't do that. It's just not fitting for our lifestyle. That Gary is coming from a point of so little reason and logic, if he's the one that he's demanding those kinds of changes to people's lives, that I have really no sympathy with him leaving the coaching role. But now it's like, they put him actually in another position. Like, he's now in some other role at Furia still, so he has some involvement. And if he can pass on any kind of orders like veganism, like that's just supposed to be regimented and you can't see your girlfriends, like, who is gonna want to join the team? Like, maybe Kai's the best person they could get if everybody in the Brazilian scene knew that these kind of just
dogmatic dictatorship kind of rules were happening across the board.
What's weird is, as far as I can tell, they haven't even, there's actually no demographic in the world those three things all cover. So you've got to have no access to women, you've got to be vegan, and you can't, and you have to play a video game loads. You didn't even cover like misogynists there. They hate women and play video games, but obviously they want to fucking go out and party, don't they? And they don't like veganism. So like, you haven't, there's no one in the world fits that demographic. You wanted the whole team.
The Venn diagram. It's just three separate circles in the Venn diagram here. There's no overlap whatsoever. They're trying to create a new player.
That's the craziest part. I know. That's the craziest part.
That player might be the next Donk, though, that fits the three circles.
True. Yeah, you might be the chosen one. Like, that is like the fucking six signs of the Buddha or whatever. If you fit all three of those, you probably are the greatest player of all time. True.